Hello, and welcome to Deep Cut on Grapple. I'm Gareth.
I'm JP.
I'm Matty.
I'm Benham.
And yeah, we're round to my dealer's choice this week. And as I said on Spotlight, the Deep Cut was originally my introduction to the Patreon. And it was something that introduced, just have a nice good debate. Let's talk about something in a bit more detail. We don't need to watch loads of matches. You know, you're just thinking about things a bit big picture and just kind of get that analytical viewpoint. And just been bastardized over the years, lads. You've just taken the Deep Cut concept.
And then Matty... what? And then Matty turned up as the punchline to that one. What are you on about, playing Benno? Steve over there. I mean, I took it to another level with Sean. I can't argue that point, but yeah. Then Matty came along and the entire history of our Patreon, that fantastic 3-year history we had, lads, ceased to matter anymore. It was a bit like the Premier League coming in, Matty turning up. Sky Sports turning up as Matty. Football League doesn't count anymore, does it, lads, you know?
Oh, bloody hell. Oh.
Yeah. Defend yourself, Matthew.
So,
no, but you know, Ben, that Steve was like, that was meant to be a one-off show and a one-off standalone. And as you say, you took it to the completely new level with Sean.
So, did like, I mean, yeah, okay.
You've got to share the blame here, like, mate.
That evolution show was yours, you know. What else have we done recently in Hollywood Rock? Okay. I don't know. No, it's Gareth's show. We're putting it back in Gareth's time. No, that was the thing. It was always going to be like a debate, wasn't it? I wanted to do a whole episode on Yokozuna dying in that shit hotel in town. Like, that was my idea for what the Deep Cut was going to be. Yeah. So maybe your direction was better, actually, in hindsight. But, you know, because there's a whole debate on that.
I mean, we'll be watching, like, the Big Breakfast interview in analytical detail. All the way. It's as much about Denise Van Outen. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I've come back to reclaim and to put it back into its rightful
after
format.
After
Matty
smashed it with a sledgehammer, Gareth reclaiming the throne.
We know how that ended up. Anyway, we'll pick things up then and just move on. And yeah, so what I've selected is Cody. I've sort of like sub-hyphened it AW Nightmare, because I think something that I just wanted to just really just get into the weeds of a little bit more is, obviously, you've got Cody Rhodes at that starting point of AEW, and we've now got the lad lot half a decade later is going to be rolling into WrestleMania as a fucking headline main event star. And, you know, you think about like AEW starting and how you've got from then to where we are now, and it's just like mind blowing, really, when you just think about it all and you just think the journey that this has all taken. So just keen to just kind of just get into it and just think about it in a bit more detail. And it was something during that period, obviously, was when I was on Spotlight as well, so we were having our like different thoughts about Cody. Benno obviously been a big fan, me being a big sort of like believer in the details that they're putting in there for the potential heel turn later down the line and things that I subscribed to the moment he came out at WrestleMania, I think. And then you know, so we can go back and take a look with different eyes.
We were saying
it's the greatest story ever told. This, if this is all the work, and it's like one day he comes back to AEW, he's like, got you. And then he turns heel. Maybe that day will come.
what did you think, Benno, when you were listening to Spotlight and this was my idea, suggestion? Was it a shock that this was something that I was throwing out there? Were you happy? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it's obviously Matty will be happy because it's been at the top of the potential shows to do list for a while. And I think we've struggled to kind of, Matty loves ticking those off and getting them off, but it's like it's one we've struggled to find kind of the timing to do, because it is such like recent history, and that's the thing, really, isn't it? Because when we do a retro show, it is always 80s or 90s, really, isn't it? Even 2000s barely
97
again until yeah, pretty much, yeah. Time stopped there and then we were done. Although, like, you know, we found some love for the mid 2000s, the last while. So I think that's kind of, yeah, we've always been gun shy to do it for that reason. But I think because of where we are in history type of thing, with you know, Cody's run to WrestleMania and, like you say, and being the biggest star in WWE. Like, yeah, this is probably as good a time
no.
to do it.
Whoa, wait, let's rewind a minute. He's the biggest baby face in WWE. He's not the biggest star, man. I'm sorry. I just have to cut it off.
We'll see when people listen to this in a few months. We'll get there. could be the biggest heel in WWE soon as well. Biggest star that's there at the shows. How about that? Biggest house show star. Biggest one of them.
Biggest one who has to work the house shows and put the groundwork in. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Fair enough. But yeah, that's where we are now. So yeah, it is. And that's the thing, time, as we always say. It doesn't feel that old, but like some of the stuff we're looking at here is literally half a decade old. The playlist starts half a decade old.
God, that is.
My bad. Yeah. Yeah. Some of the people in it do look half a decade older, though. We'll get into that. We'll get into that.
But JP, you were going to say before we were speaking off air, weren't we? Are we going to put disclaimers down here, JP, about like.
Oh, yeah.
People can go in the archives, can't they, and see, like Gareth said, whether you guys change your mind or, you know.
That's the big problem with all of this, is that there is plenty of archive footage of at least three of us talking extensively about what happens at this point in time, like on a weekly basis as well. So it's just like, yeah, there's stuff in here where I could be entirely hypocritical, and I reserve the right and judgment to be able to do that as well at the same time. But yeah, some stuff I can clearly remember being so upbeat about, and it's just like, ah. Even as far as a couple of weekends ago, Ben, I reminded, yeah, that didn't pan out the way that I thought it was going to at one point in time. But yeah,
we can always reckon it to be right.
Oh yeah, exactly. Just delete shit. There we go. Gone forever.
Gentleman's prerogative to change his mind. Anyway, there you go. Based on the information that's in front of you. But exactly. Yeah, I think it was one of those where. You know, just looking at it, like you say there, Benno, like half a decade ago, like I was just thinking about, there's going to be people who probably listen to the podcast who are like 20 years old. And like the idea, they were like 15 doing the GCSEs or something like that when all of this was started. And to us, it feels like last year, doesn't it? You know, it's just absolutely absolutely mental, like the time period. But it's like, you know, even just that time period from the end of it through to like, this year's WrestleMania, the length of time he's been in WWE now and things like that, it's all mind-blowing. Even like the latest stuff's, you know, still a bit away time-wise, but we'll go right back to the start as we look at this. And I broke it down into sort of the main feuds or the main probably talking points and things like that for Cody's career in AEW. And then the first one, obviously the starting point, is like very much about like establishing AEW, starting AEW. Obviously the, you know, if you even go back pre-AW with the, you know, All In and, you know, that coming out of like the Cody tweet about the bet and things like that and stuff. And then like, right. And then feeding straight into here, the things that I've included on the playlist, you've got that addition from like the New Year's Day when it was, you know, the being the Elite, where, you know, the Elite lads announced AEW at the same time as they announced like another Double or Nothing, or the first Double or Nothing event coming up there. Following on from that, over the next couple of months, we had that original sort of Double or Nothing rally where, you know, we had the company being debuted at that time. Then you had like, where obviously they didn't have TV at this point, there was no Dynamite, so you were getting a lot of Road 2 shows that were coming out over YouTube and things like that that you could watch, that were just putting a bit of background in with like promo videos and stuff. So it was all very different to having a weekly TV product at this time before coming in, you know, culminating in Double or Nothing 2019, and that being the opening AEW event, and Cody obviously going up against Dustin Rhodes in that event. So that's sort of all spanning, really, that first 5 month time period from January to May. So there's obviously the establishment of the company there, right through to that first match for Cody. Going back and watching this, was it like positive nostalgia for you? Was it bringing out good memories? Were your minds blown by anything in particular? I'll start with you, JP. You're shaking your head.
Oh, I mean, bloody hell. I'm just thinking, I'm sure there was a point in time we laughed at the idea that there was some billionaire's son who read the Wrestling Observer and was into wrestling as much as we were. He was going to set up his own company. And it was just like, yeah, bullshit. Like, he just heard it and just immediately thought bullshit. And then it was like the clear idea that no, this was fucking happening as well. And I mean, and so there was like, it was exciting, but there was like kind of nerve wracking as well, because we hadn't had a number two. But that's a whole other conversation, but like another time. I think the way I ended up feeling like about this when watching it, it was like that selection of Cody as effectively Dusty for all intents and purposes. Like, he is a top line wrestler, but he's also, it feels like he's the booker. Basically, this is all kind of like, this is very much like in, like, you see that like level of importance of him within the company. There's no like kind of not, there's not lots of Tony, is there? Like, I don't remember like early doors at those stage, and now he doesn't mind coming out and delivering the odd address, does he? So yeah, it was exciting times. I was also thinking, yeah, New Japan are fucked, and that turned out to be very prescient. So yeah.
What about you, Matty? I bet you were chomping at the bit back in the day at this point for the competitor, the rival to WWE coming on the scene. Is like, what are your thoughts looking back and thinking about all this?
But to be fair, though, as Ben will agree, and he was part of it with me, this is the indie Matt days, mm-hmm. Gareth. So this is like, this is the book days. This is rating all the indie fed matches, like any promotion at this time I was watching. This is the time, you know, it's been documented after I lost my mum, and I took that year out before I got me, I saved up, Gareth, you know, for when that day happened, and then took a year out, and I was just bent, as you know, you were here with me, mate, watching it till like 5 a.m. in the morning, just any federation in the world. And like JP said, when you heard this, it's like, at the time, you were like, yeah, is it going to last? Is it really going to get a TV deal? Like he said, that's another conversation, but it was exciting, and I knew all the wrestlers, obviously, through these indie feds that were going to eventually get signed. So it was like, oh, I get to see these now eventually on a pay-per-view or on a bigger stage. And as you say, Gareth, with them YouTube videos, they were brilliant. Like, every week I'd be looking forward to them coming out because they were so well done. And even that rally, like people like Comrade Thompson, I mean, we could do a whole podcast of people who've walked through the door of AEW, from your Bischoff to your Shaq, Mike Tyson's, Comrade, everyone's had
the face of AEW.
Yeah.
Comrade Thompson and the several chins, you know, unbelievable.
Honestly, it's like, just that, like...
I was going to make that point about YouTube, because that's one of the, like, again, this being recent vintage, one of the first like deep cuts we've done where pretty much everything's on YouTube, innit? And not just hooky YouTube, on the actual company's YouTube page. It's all there, pretty much, easy. Like, with a couple of gaps that you filled in, Gareth, but like, overwhelmingly, it's there. History is there on YouTube. But yeah, I think for me, like, the biggest thing is like, remembering it from the time and obviously covering it with have been JP and Joe at the time. And like, a lot of these moments that you listed off there, Gareth, just like imagining what they were going to be and then seeing them for reality. So that episode of the BTE, like when they first reveal just the logo, and that's the end scene of BTE. I remember how massively anticipated that was, because obviously it had been reported in the Observer at that point that, you know, who Tony Khan was and that he was around, and this was what the announcement was going to be. But until they made it, you know, you didn't know what any of it looked like, what the logo looked like, what the company was going to be called, any of those things. So, like, I remember, like, just that first BT coming out and, like, quickly getting it up on YouTube, like, through to the Double or Nothing rally. Same thing. Like, what's it got? What does this company look like? And getting little clues. Okay, like, I guess it turned out to be wrong, but the announced people are going to be people like Comrade Thompson, and these are the wrestlers that are going to be involved. This is what, like, an AEW production looks like. Not very good in those early days. This is, you know what I mean? But like, having all that time to sit on it and mull on it and talk about it on podcasts about what's it going to look like, who's going to be where, and then actually seeing it every step of this way, like including up to a Double or Nothing being the first proper AEW pay-per-view. Like, it was a really exciting time, and yeah, brought back a lot of nostalgia for me.
I mean, for me, it's like the same. Like, I remember like watching that BTE like immediately, kind of, because I couldn't wait to kind of like see the announcement, you know. They'd had the big tight countdown, hadn't they, sort of thing that was going on with it and stuff. And then that first press conference, like, remember watching it, and the fucking audio was awful and stuff like that. So you could hardly hear it and things like. Yeah,
and it was like,
it was like you were so excited, but then it was just like so shit. It was just like, oh no.
You could hear someone ordering a beer in the background, you know. Something
never changed.
I just thought there was just some bits though that was just interesting that come out of those where you like. You look at that like press conference, and then they like, you know, they talk about like Cody's talking about like keeping that fire burning from All Out and that spirit sort of thing that's come out there. There's the whole change the world thing, obviously, that they're talking about there. Big focus on, we're going to change the wrestling economy, like wrestlers are poorly paid, we're going to improve how they're paid and things like that. You know, wins and losses will matter. You know, there's no predetermined grid saying you have to boo this guy or cheer for this guy. You can do what you want. And some of these, as he's stood there talking about this on day one, you're just looking at it and you're just thinking about, like, the back end of this when he is getting booed and he doesn't like it kind of thing. And, like, you know, that's obviously what he's saying on day one. You can boo or cheer who you like. Talking about the pay kind of thing. And then, obviously, he ends up jumping ship for more coin and things like that. You know, there's just some weird kind of like,
you know Cody, let's be honest.
Some weird, like,
wrestling,
like, isn't he? Like, Ben, come on, he fucking top of the list, mate, in the best way.
It's just
mad to like hear him say, thinking of those. But one of the other things that jumped out for me with this period was, I mean, you mentioned them there, Matty, waiting for them YouTube videos, the Road Twos, like. The one that I included on here, that Prodigal Son one, how good was that? Like, absolutely, you know, fantastic. You've got, you know, literally just Cody in front of a camera presented in a way that's just very different to what you'd previously seen for, like, WWE and things like that. So it did look a bit unique. Talking about killing the Attitude Era, referencing Dwayne, referencing Punk again, that you're, like, listening to these things and you're, like, fucking hell, full circle if we come here again, like following on from the press conference, and you know, that talking about that animal that, you know, you love, but you know, you it's gonna die and it wants to die, and you've just, you know, you just can't leave it because you love it. You've got to, you know, take it and pull the hammer back and blow it away. Like, it just, what, like, an outstanding promo, but just such a different presentation to what you see with AEW now today and things like it. Just that just really, really stood out for me. I know you lurked that one, mate.
Oh, mate. But once again, how many old Yeller references, Gareth, did these wrestlers get in? That's what it is. They love it, don't they? But it is, it's incredible, as you say there, the way it's just done. The emotion, Cody, like, he does pull you in. He does all the time. And this was just, like, unreal. And as you say, watching WWE TV now, and it's still playing off this promo. It was weird. It's so weird. But it's great.
It's not dissimilar to the build to the original All In that they're having to do it without weekly TV. So that it's like, well, what's a match that's got a built-in story? Cody and Dustin. You know, you do Young Bucks versus Lucha Brothers for your dream tag match. Jericho Omega writes itself. Hangman Page in the Battle Royal writes itself. It's a really interesting pay-per-view, Double or Nothing. But they did, like they did with All In, and they, you know, when they were at the partnership with the NWA, and they did all the Cody and you know, speaking of WWE, Nick Aldis stuff back then. They used that same blueprint here, and yeah, you know, the Nightmare Family stuff on YouTube and BTE. It was all new to like, again, the NJP going back, but we're excited about that side of it, weren't we? Like, just like, oh, this is like a, you know, whatever the UFC called their, you know, Undisputed and all their Road 2 type shows that fill TV. We were starting to picture that's what AEW would be. It'd be this more serious sit down interview promotion of big matches, and then you'd get your big show. So, like, yeah, it was completely different, probably by necessity rather than design, but. You know, this feud is the best example of, like, taking that format and creating interest in something without that, you know, that Raw, SmackDown, weekly TV to build into a pay-per-view.
Yeah, it was, go on, Gary.
Go on, JP, go on.
I was just going to say, it was, I just having that kind of flashback when you said all of that stuff, Benno, about, like, all of this, the way that they utilized kind of YouTube, because there was always the fear about, like, you thought, well, this guy has a certain amount of money, so they can go for a period of time, but you're always hoping that the TV deal was going to happen. So it was like, how would they get around it? How would they maintain the interest? And it's almost you just play to, like, what's the easiest stuff you could do? And I think this is probably why, and this will end up disagree with past JP about this, no doubt, where the nostalgia that I have for this, like, because it's quite uncomplicated. I think, as a company. And I think, like, the story for this match is very uncomplicated. And I was thinking, how do I sometimes feel about modern day, like, 5 years later, AEW, fucking modern day. And I sorry, apologies. For that, like, I kind of, like, at times feel there's so many moving parts that you've got to be aware of and keep track of. But it was a whole lot simpler. They didn't have as many people. Still had too many, though, didn't they? But, yeah. And he's very much, you know, he's into the, you know, we knew Cody's tastes. So it's just like we'd seen it from the Nick Aldis match as well, which sort of stole all in. That this was, yeah, we were going to have this. Well, I didn't watch the match back, partly because I can remember Benno extensively talking about, yeah, don't watch it back. It doesn't really, it doesn't hold up as, doesn't hold up as well.
It's one of the, I mean, if we're going to get into the match, that's what it is, isn't it? It's pro. It's like the oldest match. It's pro wrestling. It's about the emotion. Yeah. It's about the broader story rather than the mechanics of it. That's why it works so well, isn't it? That's like always been a Pink Cody's strength, got it.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, and it is that difference between, you know, when it comes to like a match type, it's about kind of, it's about the emotion, isn't it? Not rather than the moves and things like that. That's, you know, necessarily created here. And I didn't go back and watch it in full. Like I just, I'd put the highlights like clip on there because again, I almost didn't want this to be about like the match detail and things like that. But I think it's sort of testament to them that it is memorable, isn't it? You know, it is something that, you know, you picture the blood on, you know, Dustin's face and things. And you've got that, image in your mind, you know, you're thinking about sort of like the, you know, two brothers obviously going at it. You know, it's down, you know, if you take cage match ratings, it's Cody's greatest ever match, you know, based on ratings as well. So there are people who love it for what it is out there as a match as well, you know, as sort of slipping into his body of work. I think it's one of those where if it's, yeah, you've not seen it, I think it's probably worth watching all them promos and videos before you do watch it, kind of thing, just to kind of get that emotional build into it. But it's also kind of, again, another sort of side of Cody here. Like you talk about like that promo and the run into it there where he's talking about, you know, do you think some pissant bodybuilders compare to Kenny versus Okada and things he's saying there. And then he's like, then he's talking about like, you know, he said stuff in the press conference initially, obviously here, like a big memorable part of this match is him taking the sledgehammer to the Triple H throne at the start of this match as well. So we're still in, obviously we're in biggest star or biggest babyface star Cody Rhodes WWE in our minds now, but right here, he's fucking playing the game here, isn't he? And that's no pun intended in terms of playing the fans like game kind of thing by having as many pops at WWE as he can in as many different ways, because he knows it's what this crowd wants and it's what they're going to eat. Must have brought a tear to your eye, mate.
You know what? Obviously, I do remember watching it live and I was just laughing my head off, Gareth, because it's just, as you say, he just plays to his audience. Cody's one of them wrestlers that will always do that. And fair play to him, because it is everyone will always remember it, won't they? They'll always remember that moment.
I honestly think I've never heard it said in an interview. I think, like, this didn't piss Triple H off. I think this was probably the moment Triple H was like, I want him on my team. Yeah. So I bet Triple H, I bet he got a little sneaky text off Paul being like, oh, nice one. You know what I mean? Like, enjoyed that. Had a good chuckle at you doing that type of thing. Like, I think it's probably more that than him. But he was right that this is why, like, this period of AEW, he comes across as so much bigger a star than the Young Bucks or Kenny, and so much more tuned in to what that AEW fan base wants. There's so much more meat in the bone to everything's Cody's doing in this period, and it's because he's like, he's feeling it, like he more than I think that the Bucks and Kenny is like the living embodiment of what AEW was at least supposed to be during this period.
And he also took the EVP. I know, JP, you've been critical all along about the EVP role. He's the one who took it the most serious as well. That side of job.
He went to the office. That's what I mean. Emails,
you know he got everything. He went to meetings. He went to, you know, that's what I'm saying. Whereas the others just thought, and just coasted on it. Whereas he actually took it serious. And
it's really his character.
In the end, but there you go.
His early character is him as EVP. That's kind of what it is. And the problem is that it then starts to get all kind of a bit all over the place with so many moving parts. But I think early doors, it was like the most obvious part of the show as much as anything. Mm. That's like, this is the guy who's kind of like, he's very much like the backstage importance, and they would always be end up cutting the promos and the rest of it. And you see it bleed into other stuff that we'll talk about it as well. But yeah, yeah, the good old days.
And it is that side of
things. He did the fucking work, unlike the other three gobshites. Anyway,
it is that side of it, though. Like, we will get into it, though, is that I think the EVP role maybe was like part of probably his downfall a little bit as well, in terms of the way that he's like thinking about the company. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, that was the segue I was going to do, Matty, is like straight into it. And there's obviously a big part of his AEW run is looking after his mates, trying to get new talent over, and, you know, and almost putting other people before himself. And, you know, I think the first instance of that we see, like, is his first proper feud after Dustin, and it being with Sean Spears, like, you know, which, you know, for a next choice of feud, it just seems absolutely bizarre. But obviously they're big mates from back in the day in the WWE system. You know, there's Fyter Fest 2019, so Cody's just had his match with Darby Allin, and then Sean Spears, like, is the surprise appearance in the ring at that point, which gets a fucking monster pop for some reason. I bet they, like, couldn't believe his fucking luck, you know, at that time, but the crowd were popping for everything here, going absolutely going berserk. He rattles him with a chair shot that's, you know...
Memorable moment, Gareth, again.
Unprotected chair shot that Cody's, you know, he's left sort of lying in the ring with all that blood leaking out of the back of his head. Then you get some more of the pre-Dynamite stuff with, you know, some of the brilliant YouTube videos here of, like, the pre-match build-up videos where, you know, you've got sort of like the you know, talking heads. You've got Cody training for the match and things like that. You know, you've got his home life and stuff like that interweaving into it all and stuff. So it's all a bit different. It is all a bit UFC, and it just stands out off the page. Has been different to AEW currently. And then obviously you then go into the match at All Out, and, you know, it's one where you've got, you know, you've got Tully Blanchard with Sean Spears, you've got Arn with Cody. So there's those kind of where in the early days AEW was getting those old heads involved.
Hey, you loving that, Gareth?
Those links to WCW, NWA. Loving all that, mate. You've got Earl Hebner as the ref and things like that. So this is, like, again, old AEW, the drawing on, like, the old days as much as anything here. Cody's got you know, MJF in his corner that he's, you know, he's pulling him along with him, sort of thing, to just give him a bit of a bump here, as long as well as his mate as well. And just a short run, you know, June to August. It's, you know, obviously there's no weekly TV, so it's just like a build to one match. But again, what are your thoughts watching this again? I'll come to you, Benno.
I laughed like Matty out loud when you know, Sean Spears appeared on my screen. Fucking hell! Like, that's the thing, because I don't think Dustin's an exception to what you were saying there, Gareth. It's an absolutely right point about Cody wanting to work either with his mates or get young people over. And wanting to work with his brother is another one. It's absolutely a vanity pick, but it's a vanity pick that works. It's a vanity pick that, whether it's a 5-star match or not, it's a 5-star presentation from start to finish. That feud and match, and it really, really works. This is the other end of the scale where it's same idea, but what is he fucking thinking? Like, the warning signs are here right away, because, you know, as we go through this playlist, I think you start with, like, you know, Cody being the biggest star in the company, and you end where you end up. But it's not even gradual, because right away, this is the first mistake. You know, and it's not, again, I'm going to probably re-hit this a lot of times through the show. Like, when we used to slag this off in real time when it was happening, you know, it's easy for the AEW offenders and stuff and be like, well, you know, well, Cody wanted it. This is what Cody wants to do. Cody should have been told no. There's many times in this place we get into where Cody should have been told no. And this is the first and most clear example of it. I mean, it's fine as far as the content goes, and, you know, the video, you know, that you've included there, and the build to All Out's really good, and the initial unveiling of Sean Spears, yeah, can't argue. It worked in the first instance, and, you know, the match itself is absolutely fine, but that's Sean Spears, isn't it? Absolutely fine. It looks almost perverse watching, being like, Cody's first few when AEW properly got going was with Sean Spears. What a trip, you know, considering, you know, him just time of recording, turning up back in NXT now after, you know, leaving AEW.
With exactly the same gimmick.
Is this one where you're going to be changing your mind, JP? Is this one where people are going to be going back to the archives and saying, you hated this at the time, but you love it now, JP?
I fear that there's a lot of me going to Benno, no, Sean Spears isn't the worst here. Let's steady on. I fear that that's probably the reality in the archives here, because there was always that part of like, okay, you know, I can see why they're doing this. This makes complete sense, so on and so forth. But
you need some good hands, but then they just
have and they didn't have, and this is the other thing as well, when like, it's like, okay, so they're not on TV at this point in time. They're not on Dynamite. So it's just like, okay, so we just have to have a match and a feud for him, but we don't want to kill off the stuff that we really want to do on TV. So this is what we're going to do, is we're going to have Sean Spears into the mix. And I just think Sean Spears is like, it's not a good choice. It's not a choice that I'm happy with, obviously, with the benefit of hindsight. But yeah, it feels like it's, you know, did it work? No, didn't work at all. Apart from him as like, I suppose MJF's heavy. That's basically it. But it's just, it was killing time. They didn't piss away as much money. All the WWE was stockpiling wrestlers. This is the other thing to think. At this stage, there wasn't that many people out there for them to sign. So like people like Sean, they weren't just released. They hadn't gone through the mad release stuff. Because a lot of that obviously was around like kind of COVID as well, where they started to really trim things back. So yeah, it was it was different times. That's all I'll say defending this one. But I like the promo package and stuff. I saw the match length was like 26 minutes, and I was like, no way in hell that's happening. That's just...
Anything jump out to you, Matt?
Oh, the lads have covered it. Just Sean Spears. Like, I was never a Ty Dillinger guy. Never, ever, ever got on that train.
It's such a thing. Who's a Ty Dillinger guy?
They were out there, Ben. There's a few people out there.
I had 10 chance when he was debuting there, weren't they? They were doing that.
I hated it when he was number 10 in the Rumble that year as well. I fucking hated it.
People were clamoring for that, weren't they? Like, on Twitter. Yeah. They were like, oh, he's got to be number 10. He's got to be number 10. And he was like, oh.
The chair shot, though, Gareth, I always we saying before we recorded here, like, Cody does leave you with them memorable moments throughout this, whether it's good, bad, ugly, whatever it is. That chair shot, even though they gimmicked the chair, the story, is that right? That they actually gimmicked, like, the seat part of the chair, and it still busted them open because he caught them in the right place or the wrong place, whatever you want to say. But, you know, that's how they probably covered it up then at the time, because obviously they're not allowed, are they? Unprotected chair shots. Like that, anyway. Like that.
No, that was a nasty one. That blood on the back of his head. You're like, you're looking at that like, oh yeah, that's not it. Yeah.
Am I wrong in? And maybe I missed something on here, but he gets hit on one side of the head, but he is bleeding from the other side of the head. And I did probably spend a bit too long going, hang on a minute, this smells a bit like Billy Bullshit. It's still a stupid thing to do, isn't it? It's still like, you don't fucking do it. But
are you going all back into the left here, JP?
I am. There's a lot of that. So it's back into the right here, but he was shot in the left. This is... We are through the looking glass in our paper.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the thing that's at the end of this, obviously, MGF's in his corner. MGF gets in the ring. He's picked up the chair that, you know, Spears has dropped. And there's that moment where everyone's expecting MGF to turn on him, and he doesn't turn on him. They end up hugging, sort of thing. So they're sort of, you know, setting something up for further down the line. But everyone just knew MGF's a heel and weren't buying into this kind of relationship. But again, it's Cody piggybacking him along on the early days, getting him on the star's shoulders and trying to help make one. But for the first for the next sort of chapter almost that we move on to, it's Dynamite has started. It's, you know, it's October 2019, so we're in here, and it's Cody's now going to be taking on Chris Jericho for the world title Chris Jericho's first world title defense. So you've got here, like, on the first episode of Dynamite, Cody opens the show, again, just sort of demonstrating what he is as that AEW figurehead and most important character, person in the company, you know, the absolute top babyface, having a match with Sammy Guevara, which is a nice bookend to his last match in AEW as well there. I always love my parallels that come through like that. I don't know if that was by design or not at the end, but it was interesting just to kind of see and think about that. But obviously this is where you then, from that first episode of Dynamite, where you've just got an absolutely, you know, insane crowd, like just absolutely wild for everything, You've got the Jericho beatdown on Cody after he beat Sammy Guevara. Later on in your show, you've got like an Inner Circle beatdown there. It's then interspersed where there is that kind of like crossover between your typical Dynamite stuff and the YouTube stuff that's gone before, where you've got the Cody at home training video for the Jericho match and things like that. That's well done. Right through into episode 4 of Dynamite, where you've got, you know, Cody's going after the Inner Circle to get his revenge and punching his way into the box on episode 4 to go after Chris Jericho. You've then in the build up full gear when they actually have the match, you've got Cody's promo where, you know, he makes that statement, "If I don't win, I'll never challenge for the world title again." Promo, which almost becomes kind of the rod that broke the camel's back, something like that. I don't know.
So, straw, you know, that broke the camel's
straw back. It's something that ultimately,
well, his flag was at mast. He shouldn't have done it, Gareth. He just shouldn't have put that flag in and done it, mate.
Ultimately, it was something that would, yeah, it was just come and prove to be not the best decision, as that leads into sort of Cody versus Jericho at full gear. So again, as we run through these like things that are included here on the early Dynamites, I'll throw it to you first this time, Matty. What was jumping out for you as you looked at this time period?
I've got three of these, like, because this, I remember this, and you know, I'll save obviously the not going to get another shot at the title for last, because I think we'll all agree on that one. That's the worst thing he done. But the training video, like I always say, I'm not the big on sports build guys, but when they do it sparingly and when they do it like good, it's amazing. Because I love the way they start off. Because even the videos AEW used to do were different, like with Brandy talking to him, and you just like the way they meshed it in with, like he just was blanking her, wasn't he? He was just blanking there, thinking about this match. I absolutely loved that. And then he was just at the end, he snapped the heart of it and went, "Whatever you want to do, love," or something like that, and then give it a kiss and walked off because he was so focused. I love stuff like that. That was great. Even floating, it wasn't like Sean in the Iron Man. It was more Bret Hart. He was just floating in that pool. What was he doing? He was like, maybe he's just thinking, I don't know what. But then he got on the pads, got on the weights again.
The camera.
That was like, well, didn't mind it. And then obviously, I think Benno, at the time, me and you were in agreement. You love that box angle, don't you? Where he punched through the door. I'll let you go on that one then, mate, because I know you love that one.
Well, before we go there, like that training video, like there's two things in it, because we could do a whole deep cut on this feud, I reckon. But there's two kind of things that I kind of reminded myself of this when I was watching this back. Like that video where like they're in the kitchen and like you mentioned, Brandy stood behind them, and like I did the "your best" out laughing, and Cody just came on screen just looking really serious with this camera at the side of his head pretending it's not there. He's like, the reason Cody is so great is he's like equal parts completely phony, equal parts believes everything he's doing. Like, and he's got that right mix that makes him great. And the promo we're going to get to, he's equal parts really stupid and equal parts really clever. And that's also the mix of Cody as well. He's very much a dichotomy of two sides is Cody. But yeah, the good side of him is that Inner Circle box moment, as you say, like that moment when him and the lads, and it's fucking, you know, it's MJF and it's DDP in the background.
Oh,
and
like that.
Oh, it's brilliant. It was one of the great moments in early Dynamite. It really was. Yeah, Dustin as well. And like I say, that, what a baby face, like smacking through the window and going through and getting them.
Getting an MJF scarf though, Ben, isn't it? Just delays.
What a great little point. Like, whoever came up with that. Yeah. Genius, because like that's the moment. Like that might actually be the peak of Cody in AEW, because he feels again like the biggest star in the company, the biggest baby face in the company, and like everything is ticking. It's a world away from where we end up. If anything, it's very similar to what we have now in WWE. But I absolutely love that angle, and like, yeah, I think it's one of the best feuds AEW ever did with Cody and Jericho.
Do you know what? It's amazing, isn't it? This is the only time on this where he's put in there against really a top line star in AEW, like, which you have to remember, that's what Jericho was at this point in time. His job was to get them a TV deal, which he helped do. That was the aim of it. It was like, so this was like a kind of a no brainer of a feud to go to. And we were waiting for the MJF stuff. So that was like, it kind of felt like it was a big feud. It was doing it was putting him in the proper position that he should have always been in. This time, because we're going to go into stuff that could have happened that never did, But this was one of the times where it was like, no, it made complete sense to do this. And guess what? It was great. And also, I love the fact they would go back then, getting all nostalgic for it. And I'm sure I might well have complained about it, but I used to love, like, I love the idea of them going backstage and Jericho saying, like, I've got my tickets and the rest of it like that. They used to do that. Now, obviously, and this is playing into one of Matty's jokes, if they do it, it'd just be some bloke stood by the bar by himself, won't it? Like, as they walk out to like a half empty side of a basketball stadium. So I don't know if they'd ever go backstage. Oh, no, exactly. I'm playing with fire here. But they were great. It was just like a little element of anarchy. It was one of the things, I think, about Cody on Dynamite in those early days is he got the telly side. He did. Yeah. The other lads didn't. He got that, if nothing else. And then it was like him in a proper feud.
And you say there, JP, as well, for me as well, absolutely, like, this is two of the big stars in AEW going up against you to that. And it's not only rare in Cody's run when we get into it, but it's just rare in AEW's early run, is it? The better about it now. Those first 3 years, like, the big stars just never wrestled each other ever. And, like, this is such, it stood out like, it stands out like a sore thumb. It's like one of the great things they did early. So, like, who's our top heel? Who's our top babyface? Let's make them fucking wrestle each other. Like, it doesn't take much, does it?
But it had to take, Ben, to your point, that Cody putting this stipulation in to obviously one of them losing, because that's what he was scared of doing, wasn't it? He wouldn't put the two big guys up against each other, big stars, because one obviously had to lose because they went in against complete what WWE done. He was very rarely DQs, he was very rarely draws and stuff like that, wasn't he, early on? So it's like, but this is, guys, I mean, Gareth, you want to lead it on here, this... Why has he put this in? This is just to because everyone with Dusty JP, isn't it? Sorry, of like, you know, he always won stuff when he was like a booker or a president or an EVP, whatever you want, whatever role you're naming it. This was just that. What a wrong decision. What a such a wrong decision to do.
You can just see there's this inherent paranoia about that, like, because he references it at multiple times, like in this early period. It's not just this promo, in like other stuff, he references this idea of like management and things like that and stuff. So you can see that he's got, whether he's just been too online or something like that, and he's just got this thing in his head about people just like thinking, oh, they're going to go off. Like, if I'm winning the world title, people are going to just like go. And it's the same with like the Bucks as well for a bit, wasn't it? The Bucks didn't put the, you know, they didn't put
the private party first episode. So, wasn't it, or the first match of that tournament?
You know, there was things they didn't present themselves as being the best for a while, kind of thing. I feel, you know, from memory, that's what it feels like as well. There was almost this like inherent feeling that like people are going to reject us if we're the stars, kind of thing. And it's like, no, you are the stars. That's why this company exists, kind of thing. Like, this is what people want to see, and like they just got it the wrong way around.
I think the thing that he was fearing was the fact that he knew if he wins the title, he's going to end up as a heel. That's going to happen soon enough, because then there'll be that idea of he's one of the EVPs, he's booking the show, and he's world champion. And there's the kind of, the obviously we mentioned about Triple H, but see, Jeff Jarrett kind of vibes there as well at the same time. And I think he, like you say, that's where that kind of paranoia is. He doesn't want to go heel. Now, again, God knows, like, you know, the missed opportunities that could have happened, because that would have been the sensible, logical way to progress this character. But because he wants it going in a certain way, I think that's where things start to go to shit, ultimately, is this kind of like not being able to foresee, actually, this is the direction that we should be kind of going in. And at some point, I do need to be champion. But instead, like, putting in that stip, which I'd always thought quite confidently at the time, oh, no, but when he goes heel in order to, like, kind of break the stipulation and he wins the title, it'd be fucking great. Because we just thought that's the logical way. And then it was just like, he really doesn't want to do this. It's like, okay, he's just spinning his heels. But anyway,
I'm sure we did 6 months on Spotlight where I was saying no, but when that happens, and Benno was saying to me, it ain't happening, mate. Like, and I was still believing. Like, Benno was arguing,
could still happen. Could still go back. But like, this is the peak for Cody in a lot of ways, because this is as hot as he ever is. I think he's never this hot again in AEW. There's a lot of logical arguments to keep the belt on Jericho, who's your biggest star, you know, TV, all of that stuff. Cody's got to do the side feud with MJF. But I can't help but laugh and go, imagine the sliding doors if Cody had just won. Like, I feel like it'd be a different wrestling world if either just won, or at the very least, not done that stupid stip. Because, like, the stip is like, it's this is, it's brainstorming. We do it with podcasts. It's like someone will have, like, I'll have a stupid idea of a show I want to do, and Gareth's usually the voice of reason. Like, well, actually, why don't we do it like this? And you know what I mean? You throw a bad idea at the wall, and then you come out of it at the end of it with a good idea. Like, that's any industry. And this feels like one where Cody threw a bad idea at the wall. I'll never defend it again. I'll never challenge again. And instead of it being workshopped and gone, well, maybe just against Jericho, or, you know, maybe, you know, we don't go the whole hog, or maybe, like JP said, it becomes a heel turn. It's just like, and this is the problem with, you know, a wrestler run company. It's like, yeah, cool. Good idea, Cody. You're in charge of your stuff. Let's go forth and do it. And the long damage that does to Cody over time, like, is untold. And it's, again, the beginning of the end of, like, of what Cody could have been in AEW, and then, you know, turns out not to be. Like, it's just any competent booker worth the salt would have told them no. But that was the good and the bad of AEW in these early days. There was no grown up in the room telling them that.
Can I just say, though, guys?
Something they just... Sorry, go on, Matty.
No, but apart from that line where he threw in, what a promo this was. As Benno said, this brilliant. Is as hard. Yeah. It's unbelievable. It is. Where he's like, you know, you're going about me, dad. This isn't about the dead. It's about the living. You've got me mother, me sister, me wife, the fans. I think Meltzer even said on that, because I used to listen to Dave Meltzer back then every week as well, guys, reviewing these shows.
Different Marty back then. Yeah, like,
yeah. He said this was one of the greatest promos, if not the greatest, he'd ever heard at the time. And it's
Tony Schiavone looks like when he hugs him at the end, like he's basically like, fucking good job, kid. You can unreal. Tell he's impressed. But
I've got it again. Look, yes, it's amazing.
I've got goosebumps. Yeah, like, it's amazing. When he talks about Jericho having, you know, the being born with a silver spoon, it's not the same way he was. And it's like, it's true too, isn't it? It's like, you were the son of... you entitled dick, and the fans go wild. Yeah, it's getting lost in the criticism. You're absolutely right to pull it up, Matty, because that's a really stupid decision. But the promos are one of the best in AEW history. It's unbelievably good.
And then when he, you know, I keep saying here about, like, things that you, like, you hear in the early days that come to fruition. Like, he calls Jericho a carny succubus. You need this generation more than we need you. And you're just like, what's the whole argument about Jericho now? He's just like fucking, he's like that demon clinging to fucking all the youth kind of thing to keep himself relevant and keep himself important. And it's like, it's there. It's like foreshadowed here in this promo. But I think the thing that just, again, just jumps out for me is just like how in this time period, just them crowds that go, like, and this is where one of the reasons why it makes some of the stuff there around not putting the world title on him here, or, you know, including that stip. This crowd would have ate anything up. They went mad for Sean Spears, like, coming in that previous feud that we talked about. When Jake Hager turns up at the end of Dynamite, they go bonkers for Jake Hager.
Steve Austin, like, come on.
It's unbelievable. The crowd is like, it was deafening, the crowd, for fucking Jake
Be
Hager.
The people, like, John.
Yeah.
It's just like Dustin Rhodes comes out to make a save and they go bonkers. And it's like,
I thought, who's that?
Spears,
I
was like, Dustin Rhodes.
And it's him. I don't know, it must be Kenny Omega or something. No, it's Dustin.
It's insane. But obviously, this takes us through to the match. And so at Full Gear 2019, it's Cody against Chris Jericho. What, you've got MJF in the corner here. You've got Jericho in a nice, deep lion tamer that he's got on Cody there. One of the best that he's probably put on, I think. And then he's there, like, stomping him in the head as well there before he sinks it a bit deeper. I definitely enjoyed rewatching that again, because that was so good. But then MJF's in Cody's corner, throws the towel in. So that means Cody's lost the match. Jericho's still the champ. Cody can never challenge for the world title ever again because the guy in his corner has thrown the towel in. And then we get the turn that we're all expecting, as, you know, Cody picks MJF up off his knees when he's apologizing to him. MJF just turns around, boots Cody in the nuts. And then there you go. We're freewheeling into the next feud. So, well done, I think, in terms of this angle and the way that it's done and the way that, like, it sort of sets up, obviously, the MJF feud and things like that. If you can kind of separate this idea that Cody's not walking out of there with the belt and he can never challenge for it again and never does, that's well done to set up this feud. But, you know, you've still got that sort of sour taste in your mouth, really, haven't you? Thinking of, like, like, fuck, like you said the word sliding doors, Benno, you know I've got the word sliding doors written in my notes here kind of thing. And you just think, what if they just put the belt on him there? Like, and then they did the MJF turn here in some other way or something like that. They could have got, they could have achieved that goal in a, in another way.
That's the narrow view of a wrestler. Like a good booker is looking, is looking bigger, is looking at the bigger picture. What are we going to do with all that? How will it affect other things? The narrow view of a pro wrestler, Cody's just thinking, well, if MJF costs me ever to go for the world title again, think of the heat that'll get for MJF. And it does, and it's effective, you're right, but it's not thinking of that bigger picture, is it, unfortunately? But it is, in isolation, it's great. Yeah. It's from start to end, that story of MJF being in his corner to him turning and being the one to cost him, it is like, it's a deep cut in itself, isn't it? It's a really well-told story, one of the better ones AEW ever do.
Oh, God, and it goes even beyond that, because when it was like they were turning up on indie shows and stuff like that, particularly like the bar wrestling stuff, there would be, there was one I remember in particular where MJF had helped Cody Rhodes, but he would just be like, he was telling the other person who's in the ring basically to fuck off and then turning around perfectly to see like Cody Rhodes and give him a smile. So that this was something that was like kind of like really had been ongoing for ages. It was just this weird, inexplicable point of just, yeah, MJF's an absolute arsehole, but he really likes Cody Rhodes and everyone loves Cody Rhodes. So it felt like, I was thinking there, like, you imagine, like, you know, in another universe, it's like when, you know, Cody wins the title, we, you know, you could have had the MJF feud and then he could have, like, come back to it, beaten him, taken on Moxley for the world title, taken on Omega. You know, there's all these other storylines they could have gone down that path with. And this is...
Big list here of many doesn't...
That's it. And instead, because of this stipulation, and those guys are always going to be going for world titles, that's how they never ended up interacting. And it's ridiculous. It is that kind of stipulation that ends up ruining kind of so much. Because then all, but without, you know, all of the money matches, as we would think of them, and they would have been money matches at that point in time. Yeah, this is the very much the what could have been. This is the real sliding doors moment, I think, after their match. It's great stuff, though.
And not just a sliding doors moment for Cody, sliding doors moment for AEW as a company. Like, you think when you look at it retrospectively as well, and you think that he was hot at this time, wasn't he? Like, you know, you look at this and you're like, he looks like a megastar. Like, the crowd react to him like he's a megastar. He's a proper, genuinely over babyface that the people are going insane for. We know he's got the promos in his locker. He can do enough in the ring and things like that. Like, it's wild. But anyway, this is the route they go down. We're not here to change history. We're looking at the history that did happen, and the next stage in that was all about another one getting over the young talent, because obviously the MJF turn was all about them having this long term plan to establish MJF as their top heel in the company. It was something that they'd laid down from the start. Everybody was obviously pinpointing him as someone who was potentially, like, you know, one of the future stars of the company. And then going through into this feud, you know, we're into 2020 at this point. So into January 2020, it's Dynamite Bash at the Beach. So because we're at the beach, we get Miami Vice Cody turning up in his white suit and his blue T-shirt here just to reveal the stipulations. Because obviously, if he's going to be able to challenge MJF, MJF's not just going to let him have it easy. He's put some stipulations in place. So it reveals those that he can't touch MJF until they have a match at Revolution. Cody's got to take 10 lashes on live TV, and also he's got to have a cage match with Wardlow. So you've got Cody obviously accepting those stipulations, but seeming a little bit wary about the lashes one, maybe not too keen on that one. So good bit of work from him there. But that's basically the rundown of what happens through to them having their match at Revolution in February. So you've got the episode of Dynamite on the 6th of Feb, where Cody takes the 10 lashes. You've got the match on the following week's Dynamite, where he has the steel cage match with Wardlow. And that, again, that takes us through into the match that they have in Revolution. Come back to you, JP, first on this one. Yes. Just thinking about this this angle, just thinking about the different shows throughout this period. Again, things are jumping out to you here.
Loving this stuff. I think I might end up loving every bit of this, actually, I think, apart from the match, which I think I can remember at the time just saying, my God, that dragged on and was like the worst of the kind of big Cody matches that we had around it. But it's pure NWA. So it's like, what would Dusty do in a feud like this? It's like, well, you have to pay to see them touch. That's like the first thing. So it's like playing into all of those kind of like those kind of instincts to do it. The 10 lashes, like it was nasty. It was full on. Like it was, you know, I thought I was like, you know, and the way that they kind of, I say, dragged it out, like it only goes 13 minutes, but it's kind of like, it felt like kind of classic wrestling telly. Of what you
wasn't
would,
over the top, JP, was it? It was nah. properly done. I thought that really, like, really well. Even to stuff like using his own belt, MJF, like, yeah. holding him to like using his own belt, just adding that. But you know what? I couldn't look past MJF's wig in this one, boys. I mean, what fucking hair has he got in this? Jesus Christ, what is it? It's like a fucking 10 on the top and a nose on the side.
It's like he's thicker as well at that stage, but this was like, I mean, you know, like I said, and I'm sure if you go back after the Wardlow match, me and Benno, we would have been going, yep, absolutely, Wardlow is going to be a massive star. We can see where this storyline goes. This is going to be absolutely great. And you know, let's face it, to a degree, they were going in that direction as well. That was like, I can remember that feel. You know, obviously Wardlow loses on his debut, but it was kind of like. Felt like kind of star making, even though I only remember seeing the highlights from it. It was, you know, it was the first time they'd done a cage match. Like it was, you know, these weren't things that were kind of overdone at this stage. And you think, actually, how much of the TV like this do they actually do these days? And the closest they've gone to it in like, you know, 5 years on is really the Swerve Strickland Hangman Page stuff is the stuff that kind of like resembles this kind of wrestling storytelling. So yeah, I enjoyed all of the TV. This was like kind of, this was a bit of a breeze to watch.
Yeah. Like if the Jericho stuff was like the peak, this is not much of a step down. It's close to, you know, if we're on the downswing, we're still near the top when it comes to this. Because like it's got two of the best, as you've kind of both said, two of the best Dynamite segments we ever would get, the Wardlow Cage match and the 10 Lashes. The 10 Lashes, like that shouldn't work. That shouldn't work at all. Like, it's really hokey for modern wrestling. And it feels like from the start of it, it's not going to work because it's like, okay, he's hitting him with a belt. And it almost feels like, and I remember at the time, like collectively the crowd there and everybody at home, it's like, I think this feels like a shoot. Like that, I think Cody's actually here to you. Like, and it's brilliant because it like pulls you in because you're in with him on that pain. And it's another one of those moments where Cody comes across as one of the best, biggest baby faces in the world and one of the best baby faces in the world because like it should be too much, it should be too melodramatic. But every time he takes a lash and he's trying to fight up, or a great moment of when Arn Anderson comes out and Arn Anderson's like, you know, can't remember the way he words it, it's like, you know, get back on your feet. Don't let him see you like that type of thing. Don't give MJF the satisfaction. Don't give him the satisfaction, I think is the way he words it. Like, get up. And it's fucking brilliant because it's a great bit of babyface storytelling. It's almost a match, the 10 Lashes, because it's a beatdown and it's a babyface trying to come back. And then it's a finish, which JR blows because it's supposed to be the belt shot to the face. He's like, oh, he hits him in the chest. It's like, no, that's the work of it, you fucking idiot. It's in the fucking face. He blows the Wardlow cage match as well because it's like Wardlow does this gigantic move. Sorry, Cody, that would have been even more impressive. Cody does the gigantic moonsault off the top of the cage, and Jim Ross calls it like it's just any other move. It's just like it takes Excalibur to sell it and be like, oh my God, we just saw that's unbelievable, and that's what it took to beat Wardlow. Because that's perfect too, because it puts Wardlow, you know, Wardlow, like JP said, loses his first match. But as far as being creative, well, how can we get away with beating Wardlow? We'll do the fucking craziest thing you could possibly do, which is Cody doing a moonsault off the top of the cage. The fucking nutter. And it goes perfectly. It couldn't
so perfect.
More perfect. Yeah. It's like a Shawn Michaels 96 one, isn't it? It's like, it's ideal. And it's not even obvious Wardlow catching him. He almost catches him with his body. It's just brilliant. Protects everyone. Gives you a great moment. It's Cody on the top of the cage, Brody. That's fucking brilliant too. It's like, yeah, that 1-2 of those two segments. Like, I think I'd forgotten how good the 10 lashes were and that feeling it gave you. And I'd forgotten how well booked the Wardlow moment was as well.
You're more of a Tommy Dreamer guy, Matty, when it comes to 10 lashes.
Please, Oliver dreaming in it. Please, share. Can I have another? When it comes to doing, but even as I said then, it, even like Benno as well said, even when Brandy comes down, you think, oh, it could get a bit too mel. It works perfect for taking that last shot, doesn't it? As well, that he's like, he sees his wife and it's like, I've got to do it. And it's unbelievable. It really is a great, as JP said, 13 minutes. And JP, it does seem like, you know, it's a long time to drag out 10 lashes, but it works so well. And that moonsault, though, another moment, Gareth, another Cody moment. He leaves you for plenty, mate, I tell you.
And that's it as well, is like when you look at this and, you know, I think sort of JP referenced it at the start, it's just simple stuff. It's basic wrestling. It's like it's old school, and the best old school wrestling stuff is just basic, simple stuff, kind. That's just laid out properly and thought about and done well. And like you're like, yeah, we're criticizing some elements where they haven't thought about the bigger picture, but just thinking about putting a segment out there and going, okay, we've got 15 minutes for this. How's it going to work, start to end, and just keeping it like where it was. It just comes across so well. And I'd argue, I know you say there, Benno, about like him being, you know, his peak being the Jericho stuff. Like, I just look at him stood on the top of that cage at the end of this, that enormous cage, and he just looks like a megastar kind of thing. Like, it's, yeah, it's and you know, you just think like, and then you look at like, I don't know, the fucking state of his back after them 10 lashes and stuff like that, you know. And again, it's like, that's, you know, again, as we'll come to later, what he's putting his body through for this company as well in certain instances, or for the fans probably more so in certain instances as well, as his desire to be over with them. Like, it's mad. But obviously, we talk about him putting his body through various things, and then this actually then leads into the match at Revolution. And as he comes out at Revolution, he's put his body through a neck tattoo for the first time, which we see for the make its first appearance here, which you know, was obviously a massive talking point at the time, probably more so than the match. Took away from it a little bit. You got Downstate in here doing the live entrance here, not sounded particularly great before this one. But then you've got sort of that payback in the match here as Cody whips MJF like with the belt in this match. It's a couple of crossroads, but you've got MJF hitting Cody with that Dynamite Diamond Ring, falling on him as a bloody mess to get the 1-2-3. Yeah, so after losing to Jericho, he now like moves on to his next feud against MJF, and he's lost to the new guy to help put him over as well. So the old win-loss record not looking to crash out for Cody at this point when it comes to the big match. I mean, I didn't go and watch this back in full at all. I just watched the last, you know, the finish. Any thoughts from this particular match or ending or anything?
Yeah, for me, it is the tattoo kills you. And I think MJF, you know, if you believe inside sources, has remained mad about that for the entire rest of kind of his interactions with Cody. Because I think he did feel like it stole the thunder of what was going to be a big moment with him, which is why he then went and stole Wardlow's thunder and several other people's thunder himself.
Going forward.
Yeah, I think he saw how that worked.
This is mental.
Yeah, but it's absolutely true, because it's all anyone was tweeting about, everybody in the arena, and it's just like, what the fuck? And it does, it proper takes the match down a couple of notches, and it's just a relatively quiet, solid enough 3.25 to 3.5 star match, which on another day would have been great. I will defend the tattoo, though, because I do think, like, again, talk about Cody being the most phony man in the world who also believes everything he does, that weird dichotomy. It couldn't be more perfect for him, though, could it? Like, especially for his current presentation. Like, you know, the stupid hair and the tattoo are all part of what Cody is, isn't it? It's just, it's too much, but it's also authentic. It's just, it's pure distilled Cody, isn't it? In a way, it kind of works. I always think, like, I wonder if, like, not to talk about him in a positive way, but I wonder if, like, Vince would have even signed him. I reckon he walked into that room with a suit on with a big fucking American flag tattoo on his neck, and Vince probably loved it, you know what I mean? Like, I think, I'm sure he did, because it just adds to that big, stupid American babyface thing that Cody's got going now.
Very Homelander. Like, he really, it feels, just remember, like, why couldn't he have it at the top of his arm like a normal fucking person?
You ever heard Brandy's reaction to it? Brandy's like, yeah, he told me it was going to be like this big. And then he got over. I was like, what the fuck did you do? Like, again, just sums Cody up, don't it? Stupid decisions that ultimately, it's Cody.
Yeah, well, we moved past that match then. And then, like, obviously, been early 2020, suddenly, like, this is where, when you're going through this and you're watching the old stuff, this is where you do get that kind of real change of pace as Dynamite, 18th of March. It's not really a chapter in this. It's just this Dynamite with the cold open with Cody in the ring, just like no crowd in there in the arena. And just, yeah, Cody is, again, the central point of the company. He's not the world champion, but he's the spokesperson of the company. He's there in his, you know, his nice camel coat. Addressing the nation, talking about like feeling alive and, you know, hope and all this, and hoping people feel alive and things. It's very much that kind of like rallying call to the world that everything's going to be okay, you know, sort of
perfect thing. Guy for delivering. Perfect fucking guy.
You say the camel coat, is it his coat though? Like, because that's Tony Khan's coat, is it not? Like, Tony Khan wears that coat like to this day. Was it a hand-me-down? Like,
it's a bit chilly, but it's outdoors. Maybe he just needed the face coat. He
looks good. Don't get me wrong. Or maybe they both just went to the same shop, and that's why they fell out, because they both turned up at the show wearing the same thing. But he's Tony Khan's avatar, right down to the outfit. You forget this. Early AEW, Tony Khan was trying not to be a character, trying not to appear on TV, and Cody did the talking for him, or whoever else. Like, he's purely Tony's avatar here.
He absolutely is Tony's avatar here as well. I'm trying to think, was he wearing out of Crystal Palace? Not to time frame this too much, but I'm sure it was, you know, fucking nippy. Like, you know, at time of record, like, this is happening in March and we're recording this in March and it's fucking cold now. So, like, it feels like that's kind of like where we are with this. But, I mean, it was, you know, I think at this stage it was on TV and like, what the fuck are they going to do? But it's amazing how different he is to the fucking Bucks and Kenny when it comes to dressing up for the gig. Like, just to bring up that point, like, you just think, okay, there's one of these blokes who takes his job a bit more seriously than what these lads are doing, isn't he?
Yeah. It says everything that Tony puts him in that position. It says everything about the difference between, like, him and them. But it's weird watching it back, because, like, you know, yeah, obviously, the whole COVID period it's hard to watch back now, but like, even here, like, I don't think they've quite nailed what the Dynamite presentation was going to be. No. It's just so dark, isn't it? And it's so like amateur theater when Kenny and a 30 something year old looking Matt Jackson wander out looking 30 years younger than he does today. Come out. Like, that man's aged badly. Come on. I thought you'd be right on that, JP, but it's proper amateur dramatics, isn't it? They're going back and forth on the microphone to complete silence, and then, you know, eventually they realize, oh, what would be a better presentation would be to make it a little bit lighter, and let's have, like, you know, the wrestlers pretend to be fans at the very least. But they didn't know at that point, did they? Like, the presentation wasn't nailed down on what it was going to be. It's so straight. I remembered the Cody promo, but I'd forgotten about the you know, the Matt and Matt Jackson and Kenny thing, like, because they're building to Blood and Guts, aren't they? It doesn't end up happening. They don't do it. They end up doing Stadium Stampede instead, and Cody's not even in that match. It's like, yeah, so it's obviously plans end up changing because of the pandemic. So I'd completely forgotten that element of it, really. Just, I remember Cody standing in the ring, and that's about it.
Any thoughts on that one, Matt?
Yeah, as we said there, like, just the perfect guy to be cutting that initial, you know, pandemic promo. And it just took me back watching it to just us in COVID, guys. Like, just we, remarkable, really, isn't it? Like, did any of you, Gareth, I can imagine you getting about 20 packs of bog roll in me because everyone was saying, it was I'm stocking up on pasta, then I don't know. What were we doing? It's, you know, bizarre. It's bizarre, isn't it? You could, like, I remember queuing for our Tesco at the top, you know, literally like 150 deep in the queue, and getting let in fives at a time, and having a timer in the shop, just mental times. That will never happen again. That could never happen again, could it? I'm going all political, guys, but it could. Do you think?
It'd have to be really serious, though. That'd be
like, I think it just, no one would have it this time. No chance.
I mean, yeah, danger of getting too much into the COVID conversation. And I'm glad they did it. Like, I'm glad, like, you look back on it and they got a lot of grief for carrying on, as did WWE. And we were probably, I'm sure I said negative things about it. Like, it's only fucking wrestling. What are we doing? In hindsight, absolutely the right call, I think. Got a lot of us through the pandemic.
Definitely.
Yeah, you know, and with what we know now, probably, yeah, it was right. I'm glad we had this. It kept Spotlight alive, didn't it, JP? It was the most important thing, but just gave us something to talk about every week, didn't it? You know, it's around the time you joined us, guys. You got the fun job of talking pandemic era Dynamite, I think, as a pure intro. But that was Spotlight every week, wasn't it? We talk about Dynamics. It was the only thing happening that we had to talk about.
And now we're staring contests.
Yeah. But it was certainly Raw and SmackDown were still on, but we didn't. We didn't cover that. Pre-Matty.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, JP, at least they had, to be fair, at least they were outdoors. You know, we're looking what you know now about the pandemic. It was outdoors then. They used like QT Marshall's gym where only a few guys would come in at once and you wouldn't have everyone. So they did, to be fair, I think they took better steps than WWE originally dealing with the pandemic as well. They did.
I think at that stage, it felt like it was almost just impressive how they managed to put shows together. Yeah. Because, and I think you gave, like, I remember it was at this point in time when people kicking off about a Kenny Omega, Alan Angels match, like it committed some sort of wrestling heresy. Like, I was in wrestling the 9-year-old girl. It was just like, no, they've got barely fuck all people. They're just putting people on telly because that's who they have. That's who they have available because not everyone's able to. And it was in Georgia as well, wasn't it? So it was like at this stage. QT Marshall's, And they did a hell of a job for it as well. When looking back on it, there was a lot of like quite stuff that if they'd really carried on with, they'd actually done a decent. People like Big Swole felt like they meant something because of how they reacted in the audience and stuff like that. There was, you know,
Guns.
There was
Have
the
you seen them front row all the time.
Yeah, purely they were the ones that Austin Guns saw.
Yeah,
he was.
Then.
He was. They were.
That Everton fan turns up as well in some of the stuff later on.
It's a funny one though in like sort of the footnote because we were talking about there about like the crowds and just the crowd reactions to that point and Cody in front of those crowds and then like it all goes away now for and sort of so they've built what's really only been what 3 months of Dynamite to this point and then suddenly we're in COVID and like I don't know if they've ever got that crowd reaction back like when you think about like Dynamite crowds coming back. Obviously, we've had instances, CM Punk's return and things like that. But my mind was genuinely blown on some of these early like crowd reactions there. And then I just think that by the time that like the crowds come back, as you see with Cody here, like a bit of the juice has been taken out of some of these lads because they've almost been like put on TV for the best part of a year with no crowds. Like so, I don't know. It just. Whether it's just, I don't know, if it's correlation or causation or whatever kind of thing, there just seems to be some things just, I don't know, I think it had a bigger impact on AW and possibly like some of the people like Cody and things than people give credit for.
I think you're right. Like I think it's one of those things that it probably accelerated something that was going to happen anyway, because I think a lot of the thing, you know, you mentioned Jake Hager going off here on the first down. I'll never get over landing in Germany and watching that and meeting up with JP and being like, did you see what they fucking did on the first down? I'm like, Jake Hager. But he got a massive response in fairness to him. But that was because it was the hot new thing. And it was what AEW had in those early days was it was like a cause to root for. It was ECW on a bigger scale, ROH on a bigger scale, dare I say it, Progress on a bigger scale, that same kind of like, we're all part of it and we're all on this journey. And the fans were willing to go with anything. And that wouldn't last forever in any scenario. But I do think, you're right. I think it kind of cut the legs from them. And that momentum that they had kind of went, didn't it? And it had to be something completely different for so long that when they did come back, well, you're absolutely right. The first thing I was thinking of was, you know, the Punk moments and other ones like it. And there are things you can point to. But yeah, that kind of accelerated that downswing that probably would have happened anyway.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, but it only comes to mind going back and looking at this stuff, like you say, not actually been that old, but then definitely feeling like different times on a big scale. But moving on then from this, so the first thing that Cody does during this COVID era is he's never going to challenge for the world title again, but we've introduced the TNT Championship, and that's something that, you know, Cody's very keen for it to be not a secondary title. It's an A title just as much as the world title is. So, yeah. Yeah, but well, we can have that debate, but especially as we get into some of his defenses. Yeah, no debate. But wins that by being the first tournament winner. Yeah, beating Shawn Spears again along the way, Darby Allin again along the way, and then Lance Archer in the tournament final for that one, where we've got Mike Tyson as the guest handing out the belt for that one.
And where then, he has a kit.
Yeah, it was, Steph mentioned that. Yeah, and I'd forgotten about that.
He was, you know, there was those clips, wasn't there, where he was like yawning in his chair and things like that, you know, just as the camera pans on him and stuff.
Lance Archer's in there, Gareth, are you surprised?
But the thing with this as well is like, you think about things, whether it's the COVID thing or accelerating stuff, but that TNT belt's not even finished yet at this point either. Like, there's the middle plate of it's just like not, it's just a, just a, it's like the fucking Kit Kat wrapper or something, isn't it? Basically, it's just like just a bit of something shiny that's kind of like put on there, like just
with a
TNT drawn over it, kind of thing. But it's a bit bizarre. So obviously, he's won that belt, and then what that leads to is it becomes a staple of Dynamite throughout this whole period here, running from May through to August, is the Cody Rhodes TNT Open Challenge, which probably works quite well for the pandemic era, and that you can just have these matches that don't need to be planned. You can get somebody out there who can just come and have a match. And again, just true to Cody really, and his approach to it in this time, is defending against Jungle Boy, Mark Quinn, Ricky Starks, Jake Hager, Eddie Kingston, Sonny Kiss, Warhorse, and Scorpio Sky, like in that time period here. So he's, you know, again, he's working with young lads, he's working with people that he's, you know, trying to put over. There's a few of his mates in there and things. The Warhorse one is obviously, I didn't put it on the list because I never want to go back and watch that again. But the most notable one here is obviously we get the Eddie Kingston debut, which comes out of this, which again is obviously that's something that by chance maybe becomes a big part of AEW's history going forward, Eddie Kingston coming in. But the other stuff very much kind of like throwaway, but the key one here is the Eddie Kingston promo and match. For you, Matty, how much did you enjoy this?
Mate, like, I'm a big King guy. The first time I ever saw him was in that indie mat run of seeing him in TNA with the LAX, and just falling in love with him, just how serious, how good he is on the mic, like one of the best of all time. And this promo just enhances that, doesn't it? Like, coming out, and even the stuff with, like, I know there's no crowd there, but even when he's like, Arn, you can't even really hear Arn saying nothing or whatever, but he's making Arn part of it because he knows he's whispering Cody. He's like, back off, old man. I'll rip your heart out or something. I'll rip your eyes out. But it's even the stuff of, like, you know, you grew up in this business. Know what I grew up around? Alcoholics, junkies. It's straight away that character coming right out onto your telly. Unbelievable promo. Unbelievable stuff. Love it.
And yet, I don't think it's top 50 in Kingston's career. I don't know if that's a controversial shout. But I think people who weren't UMass and weren't me, or weren't people who'd seen him before, it blew them away and it got him a job. Rightly, absolutely did.
Yeah.
But it's all right, I think, as a Kingston promo myself. That might be a controversial call. It's memorable because of what it meant for him. I don't know. He's leaning very heel in it as well, which doesn't is a bit weird as well to watch back.
Yeah.
But you can't underestimate the importance. It's more, for me, rather than being a great promo, it's an important promo because he came out and he's different to everything AEW had. And it made, people kind of wait. It blows my mind to this day that Eddie Kingston isn't that bloke in Shikara that, like, me and the other indie fans know about and talk up as a great promo. He's a bloke that the most casual of casual fans will point at and go, oh, Eddie Kingston's one of the great promos in wrestling. It's an incredible story, and it is because of this moment, don't get me wrong.
I think the thing about this as well is there was the whole, obviously, the story with him having to sell his gear, because he didn't have any money, because he couldn't wrestle because of during the pandemic, which kind of was the thing that ended up in the job. But it was also around, like, you know, it's not something. Yeah, exactly. It was, you know, he was over. Yeah, exactly. He was living in Wolverhampton, poor bastard. did well get out of there. They're on New York every day of the week. Don't care how fucking rough that put on New York is. Bloody hell.
We were in a kebab shop with him 5 months before this.
We were.
Yeah, of course. Just him, no one else. No other rest.
Yeah, no one else. No one else. But it was like that was it was almost like there was Starks had gained a bit of a rep from NWA. So it was like a case of being able to bring him in. Like there was something with that. Warhorse inexplicably, and it never lasted. It was like at the time I was like, now Warhorse is really good. Let's give him a go. And he's on TV and he's like, he's shit. Like, I was just instantly went to that, went nowhere afterwards. I think only other progress even, Brookings. That was
even it. Danhausen would have done better than Warhorse in that moment, genuinely.
Yeah.
And with any Cassidy,
it's a horrible choice. But if you were picking one, it would be Danhausen, wouldn't it? Like out of the two.
And then with Eddie Kingston, it was always like, oh, but he hasn't got the physique for it. He's not like set up for working for a major company. And it was just like, well, fuck it. We're in pandemic wrestling. We might as well try it. Like stuff to do to bring people in. You can always just say no afterwards. And it brought him in. And it was just like he knew how to take his opportunity in the way that the other guys hadn't. He just don't know. Just give me a mic. Trust me. I know what I'm doing. And they were more willing to take those kind of risks. And I think that obviously leads because the big revelation was he was unlike everyone else who was there. And he could fucking, you know, talk people into watching. So it was, let's go with him. It was like the most obvious thing in the world with the benefit of hindsight, but it's part of that inexplicable thing where people looked at Eddie Kingston and just went nah and just never went with him and just ignored his obvious abilities.
He's a great promo, he's relatable, like he has great matches, but like Vince McMahon wouldn't like him if you saw him in an airport, so he can't be a star in wrestling. That's a big thing that AEW took out of the equation, isn't it? That like actually, somebody like that can actually be a, even at that age as well. You know, pushing 40 can be somebody we can sign.
Yeah,
and I think this is another one of those though with Cody as well. If you look at like before the AEW run, and obviously where he'd been like working in the couple of years before, doing loads of interviews and stuff like that, like he'd have been well aware of Eddie Kingston, wouldn't he? You know, in terms of their paths crossing and things like that. And he's given him a bit more here. You talk about this open challenge and some of the other people in there. They're like obviously Kingston, the no, give him the mic kind of thing. And I think isn't the stories that Kingston was a bit like. He was so down that he just didn't even want to take the mic and he just wanted to just come in and have a match and just get the money and fuck off and things like that. And he didn't see it as like an opportunity. And I think he needed a bit of a pep talk backstage to be like, go out there, do your best. This could be like, you could get a contract out of this and things like that, you know, for him to, you know, have that moment of realization. And I think Cody does a great fucking job here with him in terms of just sort of, you know, helping him along here as well. And you look at the things of, you know, Cody again, working with different people to give them that opportunity and thinking about like company overall, you know, more than himself. Okay, yeah, you know, Eddie taps to the figure four in the end, but Cody makes him look like a guy who's a fucking credible threat here to the TNT title on his debut to what would be a lot of like fresh eyes, TV audience wise and stuff. And Eddie totally takes it with the mic and just even some of the small details in the match you were saying there about like some of the comments to Arn. I love the bit where he sort of like points at Arn before he does the Arn Anderson style DDT and stuff like just little things like that, you know, just like, that's what Eddie Kingston, you know, little references and things, good things with Eddie Kingston and stuff like that. But very much a Cody's run at that time, you know, you're sort of going from these bigger matches to what has just been having this TNT title, wanting to establish it as a major title, and then in reality just been a lot of kind of short, you know, matches that have a certain level of meaning, but they're just TV matches at the end of the day for a big chunk of the year until he runs into Brody Lee. And obviously I think it's at that point where that's probably the best TNT title feud that he has for sort of like a short period there over the 3 months over here, because obviously Brody Lee's come in as the leader of the Dark Order. He comes in on, you know, the Dynamite show on the 22nd of August where he has the title match with Cody Rhodes and absolutely just decimates him. You know, I think it's a four and a half minute match. And so we've been used to seeing Cody do this open challenge, winning week in, week out against these different people. Brody Lee absolutely, you know, destroys him, and then there's like a fantastic post-match angle with him just being destroyed a bit more.
Love that, the stretcher, Gareth. Love that. That's proper wrestling, mate. That on the stretcher afterwards, and he just pushes him off. That is prop. And you just see him like hanging over the little like three stairs. It just couldn't have went any perfect. I love that. Absolutely love that.
Oxygen mask and everything on there, yeah, as well, like, okay, kind of thing is, you know, is like, so, proper selling it that is out there. That's followed up there where, you know, he's off telly for a month, Cody, at this point. He shows up on Dynamite a month later, and he comes back with his dyed black hair and his black suit, and he you know, he runs in and he batters the Dark Order, or, you know, a few of the Dark Order jobbers that are in and around there, leading into the rematch with Brody Lee a month or a couple of weeks on from this in October, where they have the dog collar match there, where Cody regains the TNT title. Come to you, Benno, on this one. Thoughts about this feud start to end?
It's rough, that hair, isn't it? He looks like the bloke off Lazy Town, doesn't he? Like, it's like it's not even his own black hair, is it? Yeah, it's like it's so fucking grease black. It's horrible. Like, I'm so glad it doesn't last very long. I don't know.
It's because of Arrow.
Oh, is that why? Oh, I thought.
Yeah.
There you go. That makes sense. That makes more sense. Not good either way. I'm glad he went back. Part of a Star Aura is stupid tattoo, stupid haircut, in it. Like, that's just what the Cody Rhodes brand has become. And it's brilliant. It works somehow, wrestling in it. But yeah, it's funny because I try not to sound heartless here, like when I talk about Eddie Guerrero. Like, I don't have the nostalgia for Brody Lee that I think some people do. And obviously, it being a wrestling death that, you know, younger people than us haven't maybe experienced in real time, I know it affects a lot of people, and people do hold them in high regard. That's just, you know, not something I necessarily have always felt strongly myself. But actually, watching it back, fucking hell, does he jump off the screen? Like, honestly, like, it's like, oh, fuck, he's a big bloke who can talk, who can work, who's got, like, a bit of star presence about him. Like, it's like, oh, I'd forgotten. Like, in my head, I'd, like, my fuzzy memory had started to happen more in, like, that Lance Archer kind of bit, where it's like, yeah, he's a big bloke, he was pretty good, whatever. To actually go back and watch him again, it's like, oh, man, there was absolute, and it feels like an understatement to say there was absolutely, you know, more there, and there was money there with him. Like, yeah, he's one as well, isn't he? Because we talked about that first Dynamite. 2 weeks after the first Dynamite, it was supposed to be his debut in Rochester, where he's from. Yeah. That was literally like, and again, they lost crowds, so he never got like that hometown you know, entrance into AEW. But yeah, fuck me, he's a whirlwind watching these matches and segments back. Like, yeah, it's a fucking travesty that when he was in WWE, Vince was like, you can't be big and hairy and also well-spoken. That's just not possible. You know, you can't be intelligent. Like, this is the man who's, you know, he's the other brain behind WrestleNomics, which is one of those mad things. He was like an early presenter, wasn't he, JP, when it was back when it was indeed wrestling him in a Mukigana. He's a fucking smart bloke. And it comes across, like, genuinely, like, yeah, I was... again, should be an obvious statement, but I was blown away by him here.
It was the mad thing where he just was never, he never had the physique that Vince would absolutely like, and also the fact that he wasn't from the South didn't play into all of the horrible stereotypes that just lived permanently inside his brain. But
yeah,
this was fucking great. The tragedy is just him not doing this in front of crowds, because, and I wanted to mention earlier with Eddie Kingston, where does he move on from the Cody stuff? Basically, to a feud with John Moxley that headlines a pay-per-view, which is pretty incredible how soon that happens. And Brody Lee kind of goes from this and he ends up in a feud with John Moxley for the world title. And you're just like, as he should have done, because again, it was, they were more, at this stage, you didn't have the level of free agency. I don't know if we'd had the big round of cuts from WWE, or like, certainly weren't, people weren't joining them, partly because it was, you know, COVID time, so it was harder to get people in. And there was a lot of talk before this that Matt Hardy was going to be the head of the Dark Order as well, when it ended up with Brody Lee instead. And it was just like, as the kind of evil, kind of like heel genius. And I was still watching BTE, and he was fucking great on there as well, like kind of doing comedy.
He's funny on there.
And he's, God, you never see matches like this anymore. I fucking loved 4.5 minute squash match against Cody. I just thought it was like incredible stuff. It's like what you want your fucking heel to be doing, and just destroying everybody, like kind of en masse. believe it or not, making the Dark Order, who a big part of the reason Tony Khan took over the booking was because the Dark Order beating down the Elite was so shit. They just took charge of it, but somehow they made it work. And then they ended up working again, like after him passing, where they just became like the lovable babyface act who taken to Hangman Page and went in an entirely different direction. Like they were some of the highlights of TV around this stage. And, you know, it is really tragic because of what could have been, because this is a guy who, if he had been alive and, you know, within a sort of year, 2 years, the company, he feels like he would have been like a proper top line, like guy that stage. Cause he fucking has it. That looked like an absolute killer during this.
JP, I always liked him in the Wyatt family. Like I love the Wyatt family in general. And like Rowan,
the workhorse,
was always my least favorite guy. Even when they brought Strowman in, he was green as grass. I loved obviously Strowman's presence in that. And even then, after they disbanded, and like they'd always put like the Bludgeon Brothers. Remember that run? They put the Harper and Rowan back together, and then I think Harper got injured. But Vince like always went with Rowan. Like, can you believe this stat? I'm going to tell you, lads. Rowan pinned Roman Reigns on a pay per view in a singles match. Like, can you believe that? What I'm saying there, because of Harper making his return, and I'm thinking, I know he was injured, but Harper should have been the one getting focused on, and Rowan should have been helping him out. The way it worked, and just a weird time back then, but yeah, he was always a very. I remember him and Dolph Ziggler having a killer ladder match at one TLC pay per view for the IC. They had a good little feud over the IC. Old Nick Nemeth there, JP, that worker. But they had some really good matches back in the day, and he was very underrated. I know, like as Benno was alluding to before, he's always had that rep. Maybe like when he was an indie guy, I never seen any of that run, but he had a bit of everything. JP, you're right there, mate. And it's
Dragon Gate.
It's a shame. Yeah, as well. Yeah, it is a shame. But
and he could hang there.
Yeah,
that says a lot about him that he could fucking hang in Dragon Gate.
And do you remember he was it one of his last matches? Might have just been just pre-COVID, or might have been even during COVID, when he brought him back for that NXT like show on Mania Week. Did he work Dijak, JP? Do you remember that, where he wasn't on TV for months and then he just put him in there with Dijak at one of these NXT
matches?
Yeah. And he even got, I don't mind Dijak in there, but he, that was well received as well as a match. So it was like, yeah, just strange. He never quite got it in WWE, which is a shame. But as you say, what a squash. And the angle for me afterwards was just, even Anna Jay coming out, made the Dark Order on telly that bit more serious, didn't he? Give it that credibility, because they were looked at a bit, what's this type of group? But once he come in there, he took it to another level.
Yeah, choking out Brandy, that was good at the end of
that. But very good.
That squash was just brilliant. It was just like a whirlwind that just felt like it just came out of nowhere as well. It was a shock to the system almost when that happened on telly at the time, and that made it like jump off the screen and seem important. But I think like the people's minds are like normally go to that one, but like the dog collar match is a fucking good match as well. Like the one where Cody wins the belt, the belt back, and I know I think that's Cody's second best match on Cage Match in terms of like match rating and things like that come out of it as well. So it's one that's like really well received. I know Greg Valentine enjoyed that one, sat in the audience. He managed to raise a smile, not towards the end of that. But I think that was
a fucking didn't fall asleep.
I think this was an early though glimpse though of Cody. Again, maybe listening to the message boards a bit too much, listening to the internet a bit too much. Because after he wins this match, he does the promo after this match, and he says like, you know, people see the dark hair and the dark suit and they think that I should take a dark path. Well, you know, the hell with that. I'm sticking with you kind of thing. So very much like people are already out there chirping about this idea of Cody turning heel, and he's already kind of like putting that, you know, restriction in there against that kind of thing from his own point of view. That's not going to happen. You know, he talks about wanting to defend the TNT Championship 1 year from now at the anniversary show, which if you think by the time fucking October 2021 rolls around, it's a very different world for Cody Rhodes that we're going to be going into. And it very much feels like that Brody Lee feud, that's almost it kind of to some degree in terms of like that Cody run, because that's October that he wins the belt back. In November he loses it to Darby Allin at Full Gear 2020. And then essentially, he's just kind of like pissing about, no real direction there. I think he's recording Roads to the Top like during this time period. So he's off telly a lot. When he is on telly, it's something that's kind of a bit inconsequential, really. You know, he has a, you know, he has a match with Matt Sydal on January where he's coming out with, you know, Snoop Dogg as he's like, you know, been the one chosen to be with Snoop for the celebrity interaction. Does the whole
they're doing a telly program together, yeah, aren't they?
What's that show? The judges, it was a talent show, wasn't it?
Was it the Go Big show? Was it that?
Go Big.
So there's that he's working in and like putting that over. There's the gender reveal with Brandy that he does on Dynamite in February. Wow. He has the match in March with him and Red Velvet against Jade Cargill and Shaq. But I mean, basically, you're taking things there from the end of winning the title back with Brody Lee in, you know, the start of October 2020 through to that match with Shaq in 3rd of March 2021. It's like 5 months and he's just doing nothing kind of thing. So he's gone from being this important central figurehead part of the company and also central to the TV with the TNT title run to just basically just been gone and nothing doing really and just flitting in and out and no real direction, no real focus, you know, running into that point really. I mean, I put a few things into this time period. Is there anything you even want to talk about from this time period? I guess the Shaq match is probably the most notable.
Oh, yes. I want to talk about that massively. I could spend another hour on that. That and the Snoop thing are great. No, I love both of those. I think they're great. Like, we've got our outro music.
Of course you
don't mind DJ John Paul throw the Snoop song for the end. But yeah, I just the fact that he's like, he's in a weird place here, like from here onwards, where like some of the promo material gets a bit ropey and, you know, just kind of where his head that gets a bit ropey. But two of my favorite moments in AEW, I love that Snoop rap. It's just Cody with a rap song is just perfect. Because obviously he would become, you know, a big face for African American civil rights, as we'd find out in his next feud. Fuck me, but like great. And then like
it's like a week after George Floyd dies, mate. Oh, and he does that
like they go to a shot in the crowd, don't they, of like some bloke in like a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. It's like, lads, what are you doing? Like, don't let him do this on telly. He shows some really poor judgment during this period. But I think the Shaq match is fucking brilliant. Like, it's like what a laugh that is. Like, I'd forgotten it was Jade's first match. Like, yeah, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Like, Steph said that to me, and I was like, really? And then you realize there's a moment, like that moment in the match when the big bump happens, when Shaq goes through the tables. Like, Jade, like, is standing watching it, almost like she's like a fan. And you see Bryce literally tapping on the shoulder, like, fucking turn around, will you? Dude, we've got a spot to get to here. But it's fucking brilliant. Like, because I think QT Marshall said like in an interview that that apparently Shaq hadn't been informed that he was going to be going through a table, and they did it as a shoot, and then AEW had to walk it back on Twitter. I don't know if you remember all that drama. I don't know what the real story was there. It feels like a bit of a work, but for me that's massively memorable. That moment, like when he goes through the table, fucking, it's a mind blowing. It's a bump that most regular wrestlers wouldn't take, and Shaquille O'Neal is taking it like Cody's full body weight off the apron through a table. It's one of the nuttiest things you'll ever see in wrestling. And obviously, the match was originally set up to be, you know, obviously a mixed tag with Brandy, because we've always got to give Brandy something to do. But I think what they delivered in the end, yeah, it was a car crash, but it was one of the great Dynamite car crashes for me.
It was
wild, Benno. Wild.
Yeah. I would often ask the question, who is Jade Cargill? Why is she all over the TV? There was like, she would just be introduced, but there was never really any context given. Why was she mates with Shaquille O'Neal? We'll never knew. It was just like, just put her in there with her at the time. And thank God, because I think we haven't mentioned her enough in this, but like I always say, thank God for Red Velvet replacing Brandy Rhodes. But I think this is like a big part of the problem here with Cody is that it is the Brandy Rhodes character and all of the kind of nightmare family collective people, because this is a thing that's been going on concurrently, is Brandy Rhodes as a character on TV and just not fucking working, just not working at all. And around, like, she felt like she was more like during the 10 lashes bit, okay, there were some bits in it you think, okay, it's like in the main generally fine, but it got fucking stupid, and she was just like deeply fucking unpleasant. This has never worked on TV. Just never worked. Never came across well.
It was Brandy Awesome Kong. Who's the other lady? I always forget her name. Like, she come out of nowhere to join that stable. Was Luther in there as well with them?
Luther was in there.
I know Awesome Kong was there for a bit with them. Yeah. I can't remember.
There was that girl that shaved her head, didn't they? She was like...
That's who I'm on about. I can't
remember her name.
But it's all about Brandy. What it? JP's absolutely right. She has not gotten enough pelters here. Because I think one of the smartest, best decisions WWE made, genuinely, was to leave Brandy out of the act. Like, we're seeing it come to fruition.
Yeah.
How much better Cody is without her there. Like, she's completely unlikable. I would say talentless. I know she's got talent in, like, previous things, but she was never a good promo for me. Never a good wrestler. Completely unlikable. A terrible, worse instinct than Cody. Like, remember, like, the Dan Lambert bit where she was going back and forth with him, and it was like, aren't you both heels? What's going on? Like, she's fucking awful. And she's one of those people who, like, and, you know, you watch the reality show, she's all over that as well. She's got, like, that... She's got an unearned ego, hasn't she? Like, Cody's ego is earned. Ears is not, like, whatsoever. It says everything that when he, you know, she wanted to be, like, the focus of the women's division. She wanted to be a wrestler, you know, and it was bullshit that she only had these roles because her husband was an EVP. What happened the second her EVP husband left? She fucked off too. Did she go and work indies? No, she fucking didn't. Did she go to Impact? No, she fucking didn't. She just stopped wrestling because it was all bollocks. Like, I've got too many negative things to say about it. I got a personal vendetta against her. But
imagine if
Karen... so bad.
Imagine if Karen Jarrett thought, I should be a face. Should be a really big face. And as a wrestler as well. Even she understood. She was like, no, they don't like me. Fair enough. This is the stuff I'm going to play into. Apart from Global Force, where she doesn't. But in the main, that's what she is like. And she was so unlikable. And it was just like this complete denial of this fact. And you could say by extension, the entourage stuff is the issue. And that's the thing I think that WWE just got onto, is like, we don't put him with anyone. Don't need to put him with anyone. He can just be he can cut his own fucking promos. He's fine. He can have alliances with other wrestlers, but that's really where it lies. And all of that stuff needs to be organic. Not this shit. Like,
imagine if on the run to WrestleMania, like they just stopped 1 week for Raw for Brandy and Cody to do a fucking gender reveal on TV. How did that get on television? Like, I know the other reality shows to promote, but like, you aren't the first people to ever have a baby. Like, you know, like at the time, I remember like Hangman Page's wife was pregnant. Like, why is this one so important? Who fucking cares? She was a fucking albatross around his neck the entire run.
Egomaniac, isn't she? Absolute egomaniac. Just wants to be involved in fucking, you know, everything. And definitely the parts on this that you see are involved in, the good parts are less than 5% of things that she's involved in this entire run that we're watching here. But you must have enjoyed that Shaq match, Matty, right up your street, that.
You know what, Gareth? It's just bizarre. Another one, Shaquille O'Neal. Another, like, random person who's just pops up. We've named
it WrestleMania to give it 5 stars.
But when Shaq faced off with the Big Show in that Battle Royal at one time, remember that match was rumored for years at WrestleMania? Shaq and Big Show never happened. Did it happen in AEW? Weren't they going to build to an AEW? I'm sure that happened, guys.
I feel like I've seen it. Yeah.
I've
seen it. Even if the match never happened, I've seen it. Yeah, you were big, you were both big.
Yeah. He is fucking big though, isn't he? When you like, when you see him studying next to Cody, he looks bloody enormous.
Hey, the slam,
he goes up for that slam. Not just the table spot, he lets Cody slam him.
He's got a new chicken place open in Vegas, Ben, which I'm hitting when I go to Vegas, so I can't wait to try his restaurant there. Yeah, be all good that. No, he's a great character, though, in life, Shaquille O'Neal. I just love anytime he's on, like, Hot Ones and that guy's on any show on YouTube, he's just
charismatic.
Yeah.
I watched a documentary recently. He was on one of those 30 for 30s. It was about him and Anthony Hardaway, Penny Hardaway. And he's just a piss-taker, Shaquille O'Neal. But in fairness, he's like, I mean, he wasn't taking the piss like Tyson is by having a kip during the match. like say, about the table bump being fucking nuts and... Yeah, bonkers.
Oh, well, He spent 5 months pretty much doing nothing. So then he decides that he really needs a feud to get his teeth into. So he thinks to himself, what can I do next? Have I got any mates here I can help put over? Is there any young talent that I can put over? Because there's so much cachet in my own name now that I've managed to maintain myself at this top level for so long now. Why would I bother about progressing myself for the sake of this company? Let's have a feud with QT Marshall. And this is where Cody and QT are having an exhibition match with Arn Anderson as the guest referee. And this is where you've got the Nightmare Family do their big turn, and they, you know, they clean out all Cody's mates, and QT directs them to powerbomb Lee Johnson on stage, and Cody's they're gonna give Cody the big chair shot to the head and things like that. But shock of shocks, it's QT Marshall who's now the main adversary for Cody for this time period. But not content with putting QT over, he decides that he's going to have a few matches with some of the Shite Hawks in this period as well, because he managed to have a strap match with Aaron Solo in this time period. They bring in Anthony Gogo out of the Nightmare Family, has been quite central to this feud with the big USA versus UK build into that match, that I haven't even included a link to any highlights for that one in this list, because that's something that I never even want to think about again, never mind watch a minute of or the finish, before finally getting into the big payoff match with QT at Dynamite Road Rager in July. So this is something that covers March to July of 2021, Cody's final full final year with the company. What better way to spend a quarter to a half of your last year with the company, feuding with QT and the Nightmare Family. I know Benno's a big fan of the Anthony Ogogo stuff, so maybe start with you on this one.
How is it so bad, though? Like that Anthony Ogogo segment, watch the whole thing back and full. I can't even figure out what they were going for. Like, it gets blamed, doesn't it, on poor wife fucking up the scale and not really knowing how to use it, and there's awkward silence, isn't there, while he's trying to figure it out, because no one's thought that ahead of time. Like I said, I've said it before, like, it's been long enough now, but when we met Anthony Ogogo at that watch party, like, he was saying, like, during the segment, like, he just Big Show hates him, basically. I mean, you think, like, Big Show thought he called him a stupid cunt or something during this while he was trying to fix the scales, and that's why Big Show hated him. And you know, they came in with an idea. I don't remember if he really explained why it went off the rails so bad, but he said, like, maybe somebody forgot the line near the end or something. Because there's a weird, like, silence, and then the heels kind of get off. Anthony Ogogo kind of gathers his clothes, doesn't he? And then Cody's like, see you all at the pay-per-view. Have you forgot you're on telly, lads? Like, what's going on? Like, did nobody script this last third of this segment? Because it's bizarrely bad. And yeah, the US versus America stuff, you know, is horrendous. It's horrendous. And again, this is another one where Cody in the promo leading up to it is talking about he's about to have a mixed race baby and how amazing that is, because again, they're the first people to ever have a mixed race child, so that's going to come into his wrestling promo. It's awful, the Yay America stuff, awful, like every bit of it. It's just a bad idea, isn't it? And yeah, it's surrounded by losers. This is, we joke a lot about, like, the Codyverse. This is the Codyverse, like, 100%, and all of the characters surrounding it.
What do you think watching this, Matty?
You know, that, like, because I obviously remember the promo that Benno was on about, and you still get that, is it that meme to this day where, like, it's Cody emotional? That's the one you see all the time on Twitter, that little cut. You always see it. But I forgot about the weigh-in, so I thought I'll watch it. And I thought, this should be all right, this. I couldn't really remember. I thought, you know, it's a proper, like, wrestling angle for me. I'll give this a go. And as Benno said, it was just so weird. Big Show out there trying to awkwardly host it. It was just fucking nuts. And then it just ended. And I didn't know what Benno said. Like, someone forgot. And, like, he said he spoke to a go-go, but it just, yeah, it wasn't good. And why is this even a feud, though? As you say, Gareth, like, wanting to work with, like, the QT Master stuff, all right, I guess, to a degree. But at this point, he shouldn't even be working with him at the same time. So yeah, just bad stuff all around this. Like,
it'd be one thing if, like, Aaron Solo and QT Marshall and the Hairy One and all of these people, you know, we're now 3 years down the line. I'm like, oh, the stars now, they're not ours. Yeah. It's the list of names of fucking jobbers. Like, that's who he's working with.
It's just a weird one as well, because the like, when I watched it back, like the first one after the exhibition when QT does the turn, I'm like, I was like, that was well done. Like, it was good. Yeah, it was. Like the way it was delivered all in all, like even QT stood on the stage just with his back to it all going on before he turns and things like that. I thought, you know, that's good. But it's like, but it's QT Marshall. Why don't you keep this in your locker for somebody else? Like, more important. Kind of, like, it was so weird. You'd be like, oh yeah, that was brilliant. If it wasn't QT, if it was somebody else, it was just so bizarre. Like, what a bizarre choice at this time. Like,
just
waste of his time.
QT Marshall's someone who, like, he would benefit to the present day so much if he just acknowledged who he is. You're QT Marshall. Acknowledge that, accept that, and lean into that, because you're clearly very good at whatever backstage jobs you've got. But he's got this wrestler ego, hasn't he, where, like, he has to be infused like this, and, like, he is hard done by, so he should be in these moments, or he should fuck AEW have to go and work the indies and get a load of bookings, which he didn't get, so he's come crawling back. Like, if QT Marshall just accepted, like, his lot in life, and that he can be a great influence, like, backstage in a wrestling company without this, or QTV, or any of the rest of it, like, yeah, he'd probably be better off himself.
QTV, fucking hell. Jesus Christ. Even Shawn Michaels.
Triple mania match. Gotta say that. Yeah, I know. Oh, yeah, I know. That's basically what happened, hasn't it? I reckon him and Sean Spears were, like, both getting weighed up, and it was like, ah, we'll bring Sean Spears in. I reckon Cody put a word in for both of them, and they went with Sean over him. Like, just, yeah, accept who you are, mate. It's fine.
And to this day, one thing I don't understand is, were they shoot weighing them? Because why can't Big Show just go, like, oh, 218 pounds after 3 seconds? Like,
yeah, you're in the business 25 years. You should just go on the flyer, just say, let's be honest.
You don't actually
have to weigh them.
It's not a rookie.
Yeah. Some bodybuilder's probably watching it going, oh, that's wrong. So what? Ignore them. Just pretend you got it right. Yeah. Like, yeah, I thought exactly that. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, wild.
Isn't this the one where there's fireworks going off during the promo as well, isn't it? From a local baseball team. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Very distracting. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just... Well, I mean, it's at this point where obviously he has the match with the Gogu. I think it's the first time that you get, like, the Homelander style, more Americana Cody stuff debuts itself, obviously, in with the UK. Versus US feud, the match that with QT at Dynamite Road Rager that ends things off there again is a bit more Homelander-ish here as well, kind of thing. So you start to sort of see that evolution in terms of his gear and things like this at this point. But probably the most notable part of this match is that it then acts really as the bridge to his next feud, which again, love him or hate him, it's definitely something that's on a higher tier than working with QT Marshall. But it's the debut of Malakai Black as he debuts at the after this match at Dynamite Road Rager, where the lights come out, comes back on, and he attacks Cody, and then that leads us into this whole feud with Malakai Black that runs for sort of about 4 months here, where you've got the first match where, sort of almost like similar to the Brody Lee, you've got Malakai Black getting that real convincing win in about 4 minutes flat here. You've then got the rematch, which goes a bit longer, but Malakai gets the win again in that match, where he's blown mist in Cody's eyes, and then eventually it, like, works through to the final match where Cody finally gets his win back. But some notable steps along the way here, that this is where you're definitely seeing that difference with Cody. This is where the crowd are booing him more. He's getting that negative reaction coming through for the first time here. And then, you know, this is where you then have Arn leading into it a little bit more, and, you know, trying to do a lot of the work around, like, trying to motivate him, trying to be a bit harder, you know. Obviously Arn does his Glock promo in this time. He's doing the stuff like burning the stuff outside his house, burning his good tie and his good gear and all that. So I think as a feud in totality, it's something that's, you know, probably the first thing that he's sunk his teeth into properly for, you know, since the Brodie Lee stuff, really getting round to this point. It's something that definitely kind of, as you've, they're working in front of live crowds a bit more, they're getting a bit more reaction for and things like that, but not the reaction that he wants, probably not the reaction that they're expecting. And I don't know if this is just punishment for working with QT, but I can't remember where this comes from. I can't remember why the crowds are just suddenly start booing him at this point. That was one of the things that I was going to kind of try and poke your memories with a little bit, really. That there's God, what a shift here there is in a 12-month period.
It's not gradual as you would maybe remember. I don't know if you were going to say the same thing, JP. For me, it's like it feels a bit like it comes out of nowhere. But having done this deep cut, it doesn't come out of nowhere, I don't think, because I think people are just, and it's horrible to say because, again, how big a star babyface he is now, people are just sick of his shit. I think, and it's because it's smarter fans watching AEW, no offense, Matty, but I think it's people who are more in tune to like the booking being good or bad and just recognizing that the booking's been bad and it's mostly Cody and he's working with his mates and he's being very unlikable and making bad creative decisions. And I think it just all accumulates to people just getting sick of his shit to the point where it's almost like a smart, I suppose Cena was the same thing. It's a version of what happened with Cena, isn't it? Down to a lot of the same elements, you know, trying to throw his belt to the crowd and throwing it back. But for me, I think it's a bit like that, in fact, JP, in that it's people just getting sick of Cody's shit and just being almost, it's almost like they're disappointed in him, because that's our feeling on it. I think that was most fans' feeling at the time, because obviously it hasn't stuck, because again, he's a gigantic babyface again now. But yeah, at this time, like, I was with them, really. It was like, yeah, just fucking sick of this. And yeah, it was the booking as much as anything.
I think this was the point in time where you would say, you'd be laughing most weeks. It'd be like, this is the dumb fucking Cody shit this week. And you just laugh at it. Because everyone knew he's just spinning his heels as well. Like, this is just, all of this feels like a gigantic waste of time. And this is probably at the stage where it's like he needs, his character needs to change and it needs to evolve. And that was the one thing he was absolutely set on not doing. And it was like, so, you know, what would a wrestler with some other instincts go, hang on a minute, the crowd are booing. How am I going to play into that? How am I going to make that work for me? And he was so set up for it, but he steadfastly kind of refused. And he thought, okay, is this a kind of bit? Because surely he recognized, you know, with the scene and stuff, it's like, actually, there's an interesting direction they could go in. And
JP,
it's not like they couldn't have done with the fucking boost. And he just completely rejected it. So you end up with this Malakai Black feud, which, in sorry, Matt, he just in some ways feels like it's like a rehash of large swathes of the Brodie Lee feud. And it's like, we've kind of been here, no? Like, you know, it's similar in kind of style and format, and it's haphazard, and we'd be joking, how many people is he fucking feuding with? But yeah, sorry, Matty.
No, sorry to try and butt in, but just while my train of thought was there, JP, it's like you're saying there, like, it's different for Cena and Roman early on, because Vince was so hell-bent against it. Cody's heard this, and then he's deciding not to turn, when he's got all the power to do it. So it's even more bizarre for me that he didn't have Tony Khan go, no, you stay as a face. He could have even just turned himself, which baffles me. Because even, like, after this, well, it's just after the last match, isn't it, with the, before the next few, Gareth, where he literally says in an interview, I will not turn. And it's like, what are we doing here? We're telling you, I'm telling you.
And he'd be the biggest heel in the company by far, nuts, if he ever did.
He did. I mean, in fairness to him, like, I thought this was what you were going to say, Matt, and it could be Cody bullshit because it's Cody. But he did say since this that, like, and it's actually a point for you, Gareth. He's like, oh, no, I thought the best way to turn heel was to not turn heel. And that's the meta of what I was doing. You know what I mean? I wanted those boos. I don't know if he did. But that's the way he explained it. That, like, he learned from John Cena, the best way to get heat was to actually not do what the fans wanted. I don't know. Maybe there's something to that or not. But I was going to say that the funniest thing for me, to go back to Garrett's point on the match, is, like, that Malakai Black, of all people, is like this fucking cause for, like, the, you know, when it was like, you know, let's go Cena sucks, and it was
fans love him.
Edge or Punk on the other side. It's Malakai Black here who's like this, you can hear this vocal, very male audience cheering, like, yeah, he's going to kick Cody's head off. Malakai Black, who has unbelievably three match singles matches with Cody. I didn't remember there was three, which probably makes up 78% of Malakai Black singles matches.
like our losses.
Yeah, but they clearly, you know, thought it's a good idea, I suppose. To like at an original point of like, yeah, Malakai Black, let's get him over as like this big, you know, single star that we could have at that upper mid card level. Same thing with like Cousin Andrade's kind of circling as well. He's on the fringes of this as they build that pack match as well. It's a lot of lost causes in the end, unfortunately. But you can see the thinking, I suppose.
It was like the first wave of cuts that we started to have of people becoming available at that upper mid card, and we thought, oh, they could do something. People that we'd always heard, well, Vince doesn't like them, so we were predisposed into thinking, this could be a person who ends up really connecting. This could be a person who ends up really connecting. And it just, like, the pair of them just went, nah, I'm not losing. And you could put Miro into the mix
Miro
as well.
Miro as well, I was going to say.
Yeah, and yeah, so yeah, what ends up happening
is Andrade gets involved in this as well. Like, you know, yeah. This is where it starts to get a bit overcrowded, really, with other people in and around the mix. But there's just some great in this time period. There's some great stuff. Like, I just love the Malakai Black debut when like they call him Tommy End and stuff, and then suddenly Excalibur just spouts out, "That's Malakai Black," kind of thing.
JR's even like, "Who's Tommy End?"
Who's Malakai Black though? Yeah. Like, yeah. The
guy. How did he know? How did he know?
Where's
Jim Ross is trying to stall it. Like, where's he been? He's been missing for a while, this guy, or something. Like, he has no fucking idea with him. Just trying to filibuster. But just Arn Anderson in this period as well. Like, there's the comedy bit where he's got to take the spot on the apron. He fucking goes around the corner post and falls off the apron to the floor before he has to get back up. Like, pissing myself laughing at that. But the stuff that the role here with like the motivational stuff for Cody Rhodes, like the whole Glock promo and then the whole burning his clobber outside his house, like to try and fire him up, like brilliant.
It's because that Glock promo, once again, it's every fucking week on Twitter you see a reference to it on some form or another. But the week after is even better because when Cody sees him, and what a fucking house Cody's got, by the way, that's his house. He sees him burning the stuff, and the first thing he says when he's walking down, "Oh wow, come on, what are you gonna do? Shoot me?" Just what a callback for the week before. I love that fucking delivery of that. Incredible stuff. This genuinely is. I love it so much.
Too much on. Let's be honest. Far, far, far too much on. Like, and what a weird. I was just thinking about. It's like. Just the logic of like what a lot of the time I'm wondering, like, why was he really there? Like, I know the Glock interview and stuff is a laugh and the rest, but why is he there? Why do they think, like, I can't imagine what he thought when he first saw Tommy Bellend, Malakai Black. Like, just looked at him, went, "I'm working with this bloke." I can't think of two more different fucking people. Like, just the conversations that would have taken place. So, Malakai Black going, "No, I ain't selling shit. I'll do a spine buster." Nope. Okay. There's going to be problems here. But I want to burn your suit. You're not burning my suit. All right, I'll burn this tie instead. Okay. Like, it's just like it's kind of mental. It really is. It's just, and it was at this point, it was just like that realization of there's a lot of old blokes just knocking around here, and we can cull 75% of them. And that goes for the commentary booth as well. It's just like all of a sudden the fucking age of people on the shows is kind of skyrocketing through the roof. It's just, it's so wacky, this stuff.
Like, it is, and it is that time, like that time period where there's a lot of people, you know, mentioned like Tully Blanchard before and things like that been involved, and it's little things like that that you definitely see that step change in the product from then to now, that certain things like feel a lot different. I mean, just moving on to the end of this feud, like it ends. Cody gets his win finally in the third match. You know, he puts Malakai into the pedigree position, but he doesn't hit the pedigree, and you know, instead he hits the Tiger Driver 98, and then that leads into a feud. A promo that he does on Dynamite a week later, where you know he talks about, you know, "I hook both the arms for a brief moment. I thought about hitting a different mood, you know. Could I have broken the EVP bond, maybe challenge for the world title?" You know, you know, you can cheer, you can boo, and kind of almost hinting at this idea that he could have turned heel and been like Triple H in that moment, and you know, just steamrolled his way to the world title. But that's not what it's about. But he starts to get a little bit cryptic here, a bit more. He's like, boo the man who writes the checks, don't boo the man who built the bank. And you know, I've heard it all online. He's got a wife that's too hot for him, and his brother's better than him, and you know, there's an easy way out. Matty said it before, I will not turn. I love you guys very much, and I've loved you my entire life. I'm apologising if anyone thinks I've got a little bit Hollywood, you know. Tells Arn it's an honour to stand in the ring with him. He's like, he's trying to pull every lever that he possibly can here to get the crowd to get back on side with him in this like one promo, but you know, they're just not having it, you know. And again, and this, as we get through this final time period here from October through to January, there's just sort of like various instances with that. You know, you've got that episode of Dynamite famously where, you know, he throws his belt into the crowd and then they throw it back at him. later when he's on the ring apron, there's almost that physical rejection as well as the vocal rejection by tossing his belt back to him here. You've got him trying to do just fucking bizarre stuff here. Like if he's trying to, I don't even know what he's trying to do, like win favour in some way, pissing about with Fuego del Sol as Fuego 2 on Dark and things like that, just doing that odd stuff. Is when he's having matches here at the end, he's like, say, with, you know, the Andrade match, he's doing the whole flaming table spot and things, trying to just get the crowd, you know, do something mad, do something berserk, get the crowd on his side, kind of thing. still getting boos, and then ultimately it like leads into his final feud with Sammy Guevara, which is convoluted as well, really, as he wins the TNT title. Randomly, Sammy wins an interim title in between, so then that leads into a big, you know, into their final match. I think we'll touch upon like the last promo and last match and things like that in a bit. But really, what's going on in his head here? Fucking October to December, all this stuff, like trying his hardest to be a face and trying to just pull all these levers to get people to be on side with him, but they're just not having it, and it just like, it just looks like a mess. A mess here. Like, Matty, start with you. Does this look like the man who would turn up at WrestleMania a few months later?
No chance. But as I say, throughout this whole podcast, it's moments again, Gareth. Like, as you say, but for the wrong reasons here, he's trying too hard. That flaming table spot, lads. I mean, what, even in the first Malakai Black match, the squash, the bump he takes off, like, the top to the outside through that one table's nuts. It's like he's just trying everything to, like, as you say, win the fans back over. That flaming table, you can see he's actually on fire, the shoulder, while he's pinning him. And Andrade's tapping him to put him out, which is good work from Andrade. Very, very good work there. Like, and even in the Guevara stuff, sorry if I'm jumping ahead, Gareth, even that moment, that cutter, I mean, how perfect a spot is that? Like, it's unbelievable. But yeah, he's all over the place here. And as you say, like, and we'll touch on this at the end, but it isn't the guy who turned up at WrestleMania. And I just couldn't believe at the time still. And I watched it back because you put it at the end. When he comes up through that, it's still no surreal moment. One of all time in wrestling for me is when he does turn up at WrestleMania. But this last stint in AEW, mental.
I can't believe that, like, Triple H or Vince McMahon or whoever it was that made the call to bring him in, watch this period. There's no way. Their TNT subscription has expired. Their TBS subscription has expired. Because you wouldn't sign this man. But what he's so desperate. Like you say, it's not... Obviously, it's in the spots, but it's in the promos. It's in the things he's saying. He's basically begging for them to cheer him. And again, you know, he tries to talk it up now as like a meta worker, like he wanted to hear it, but he didn't. It's written all over his face. He's throwing in little shoot lines, isn't he, about his contract and about how he might never have the chance to say this, so he's going to say it, and he's going to reference randomly the pipe bomb, which I remember had us all scrambling, thinking, oh, there's a match with Punk coming. No, there wasn't. Just Cody talking shit, trying to get the fans to cheer him. It's all over the place, like, this period, and it's like, yeah, it's like, we'll get into it when we talk to somebody of it. Like, you know, there's a lot of people who are wreck on this and be like, well, it was best for AEW left and it's best for WWE that he went in. And it's like, well, yes, maybe. But we shouldn't have been at this point. This shouldn't have been happening. Compare this to his first, you know, his first months on Dynamite. Compare it to the Jericho period, the MJF period. He's like a different man. It's embarrassing. He slipped so far down the card, and we've just gone through it all. And yet again, it's even watching it back, it's hard to pinpoint exactly how it happens, because it's just like all of a sudden he's here, and in this period that quick's in mid-card, isn't he, at best? Like that's where he's landed in the roster. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's such a weird and always think with him turning up in WWE as well, is it was just like, is this actually going to really happen? Is this really going to happen? Just never being convinced. Just to the point where I actually saw him, it was like the worst aspect of like, I don't believe this football transfer's happened until I literally see them at the stadium holding up the scarf above their head. Until that stage, I don't believe it. And then, obviously, when he did turn up, it was absolutely fucking crazy. But it was... this end bit was just, I was almost sat there and just being quite angry at points about it, just going, what a fucking waste. What a massive fucking waste of this. There's almost a deep cut of someone else that we could go into and their AEW run where we could say much the same thing as well. But yeah.
I feel like that meme of like, they can't keep getting away with this. Like, people let AEW get away with this. They genuinely do. People talk about this history, and they did it at the time, and it drove me fucking mad. And it shouldn't wind me up, but it did. Because it was like, they're talking like Cody leaving some travesty. No, it's not. AEW will be fine. Shut up, Benno. I remember that being like a comment somebody made, and it was like, I mean, they will, but like, I mean, AEW's not going to go out of business out of Cody leaving. But we shouldn't be at this point. This is a person who was AEW in that first month. This was his company. Like, this was, he was the poster child. He led the pandemic era, all of those things. He should have been there, top babyface. And now we're at this point, and somebody's to blame for it. And I'm not even saying it's Tony Khan's fault. It's probably, a lot of it is Cody Rhodes' fault. Like, you know, it's a lot of his own bad decision-making get us to this point. But they deserved, right? We were very negative during this period in AEW, and they 100% deserved it with both battles, because it's like, it's booking malpractice that Cody Rhodes is fucking around during this period, doing rando back and forth with Sammy Guevara over the TV title, the TNT title, and with Fuego del Sol on Dark, and, you know, lighting himself on fire with Andrade on a TV match that hadn't warranted it, and cutting those random rambling promos. Like, it is booking malpractice, and whether that's Tony Khan's fault or Cody Rhodes' fault doesn't really matter at this point. Like, it's unreal that they got to this point, to a point where smart people were looking at this and going, yeah, one of the EVPs, one of the pillars of AEW leaving probably makes sense, doesn't it? Like, unreal. It wasn't a given, and it shouldn't be a given.
And this is where, like, leading into like that, the very last in-ring promo that he does on Dynamite on like the 19th of January, and like you sort of touched upon some of the stuff there, Benno, but like, you know, he's listing some of them CM Punk's things, he's listing the pipe bomb, he's talking about going to New Japan and Ring of Honor and teaming up with the Young Bucks, and like, you know, he's saying that, you know, I did those things, I carried Anti-Monopoly on my shoulders and things like that. You know, he's trying to present, you know, again, he's trying hard to sort of babyface himself to this crowd who should be like attuned to all those different things and should be positive to all those different things about him, and but he's just getting shut the fuck up, chanted back at him. People just like sick of like listening to him talk, and again he's talking about like, I won't turn heel, and you know, whatever, before there was a Forbidden Door I was the one who built it. And then he's starting to scramble, and he's starting to get a bit like anti-WWE. He's talking about Red Dragon like doing hip toss class, and he's talking about we don't change people's names to like Gunnar McGillibutty and all this kind of, he's having these little pops of WWE out of desperation to just try and get the crowd back a little bit to just sort of turn with him and be with him. And like, you think, like, you know, he also says the line here, doesn't he, Tony Khan sent a message in the mail to sent a contract in the mail to Sammy Guevara and myself, maybe not the contract I wanted, kind of. And then like, so he has that little kind of slight barb there at like, you know, like Tony Khan a little bit, and he's just like, just all over the place here, and just trying to get those fans on side. But I don't know if like, I don't know if he wanted to go. Like, I almost feel like he didn't want to go, like, at this point, like, to WWE. Obviously it's on the cards and things like that, but he's sort of trying so hard and almost in desperation that, like, and even mentioning that about the Khan contract and things and having the little pops at WWE, you feel like he's working as hard as he can here to try and get some semblance of something to convince either the crowd or people in the back for him to stay and get the right situation. That's what I took out of this as I was watching it.
There were so many more new toys to play with though, weren't there? And they were all a bit cooler than Cody. And Cody wasn't going to do the cool thing and turn heel, which, you know, again, you go down the fantasy booking fucking rabbit hole of this where, you know, you think of all the potential matches he could have had, like there's no Moxley feud, we don't have a Danielson feud, we don't have a Punk feud, obviously, all of that stuff. And
Hangman Kenny.
Yeah, Hangman Kenny, yeah. And I think that's it. I think there's just so much of like the wasted opportunity with this stuff. And the fact that, and I remember one of the big criticisms was the fact that Tony Khan just didn't, it's like, this was like the first real impression of like the sloppy shop stuff. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? This is stuff you should have sorted out. This is stuff you should be managing. The idea of him going is just from the optics point of view of the guy who was one of the founded and driving force of AEW as a business, like being gone. Being kind of like driven out. And I almost think Tony Khan just thought, I don't really want to hear his voice. So fuck it. We'll let him leave. He won't be worth as much. I think a bad miscalculation. Shit that should have been sorted out like grown up, like just like adults.
And it's funny because, like, I mean, I don't think we need to touch on the match. It's a brilliant match, like the Cody Sammy Guevara match, the last match that he has at Dynamite Beach Breakers. Yeah, Matty says there's some fucking insane spots in it and things like that as he's working hard for the crowd and trying to get the crowd on side and for Sammy as well, like true to form with him trying to put people over. But I'd never seen that backstage promo before. There was like the one, it was just for their YouTube, I think, and it was just him backstage, like after the show, and he's like talking there and they ask him what's next for Cody Rhodes. And you can just see that he just looks like a man who's rejected. He just sort of feels like a man who sort of doesn't, I don't know, he doesn't know what he is, and he's talking, you know, his sort of spirit's gone a bit, you know, he's talking about like, he's talking about the audience has grown, TV audience has grown, we're in paradise kind of thing. So remember he's that? Got that positive side to the AEW side of things. But then he's talking about, you know, he's working without a contract and he's never felt more at home than he has wrestling under those lights for the TNT title. And he sort of says thanks at the end and his voice breaks. And like, he just strikes you as somebody.
Sad, isn't it? It's sad.
You just think, from where we've gone at the start to that first press conference and the guy speaking in the pandemic and the first match and on Dynamite and all that. And then this just looks like a broken man kind of just sat there in the backstage, just giving this, and that's his farewells, a little YouTube kind of thing where he's sort of thinly veined kind of praising AEW and sort of saying, I still want to be here. Like, and kind of feeling like it looks like he does as well, but not having the conviction that it's gonna be like, I thought it was I was upset. Like by the time I got to the end of it, obviously shouldn't be upset because like obviously things have fucking worked out great for him, like better than ever kind of thing. But like, it's just you think for the time, effort, emotion, and everything like that everything that we've talked about on this run, for that to just be the end, like it's so bizarre. Like I was trying to like parallel it, and I was thinking, like, it's almost if just like at the end of Return of the Jedi, Luke Skywalker was just like rejected by people and he just joined the Empire kind of thing. And like, you know, just, you know, people are, you know, ended up just doing that because that's kind of what it feels like, all this rebellion and all this kind of, you know, anti-WWE and all this stuff. And then he's like, he sort of goes out of the back door with his tail between his legs a little bit here, really, which is what a bizarre scenario.
I think his relationship with Tony Khan must have just been beyond repair. Whatever the reason is, it's clearly beyond repair.
Love to know that, Benno, though.
Anytime he talks about it, like even at like that most recent presser at Rumble, he was just like, yeah, it's a personal issue and I'm not going to go into any more than that. It's like quite clearly, it's not a personal issue with the books. It's not a personal issue with Kenny. Well, maybe not Kenny. it's not a personal issue with CM Punk, obviously, which was something I think some people thought might be the case at the time, because Punk has just come in and is the shiny new toy. Very clearly something with Tony Khan, whether it's the fact that he was doing that desk work and getting no thanks for it, whether, as he alludes to throughout this run, like a lot of these people that would make up AEW are people that Cody Rhodes took his job very seriously and went out there and recruited. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of that that maybe, you know, he didn't get the, you know, maybe the recognition he wanted. Either way, like, yeah, very clearly in the, I think watching it back this time, like some of the words he's using in the promos, specifically this last one, there's definitely something there with him and Tony, like you said, Matt. I'd love to know exactly what, because I can't believe it couldn't be solved, because that's the other thing about this, not to retcon it, because back in time, in 2020, you know, around the time this was happening, 2022, I didn't believe he was actually going to go to WWE, though. Despite all that, I didn't think it would actually, it didn't feel like a real possibility, did it? It felt like, oh, maybe he'll negotiate. But of course he's not going to go to WWE. Of course he won't, because he's so far to the fabric of AEW, and he's not going to get his Codyverse in WWE, and who knows what they'll do with them, the fucking cunts. You know what I mean? It was like, it was almost, I would have been quite bullish on him remaining with AEW, or further than that, quite bullish on the right call being stay with AEW. Like, I mean, that is obviously wrong, because like WWE would get him, you know, more right than AEW did in the end. But like, absolutely at the time, like it just felt like, ah, he's good. It's a matter of time. He's going to resign. Yeah, he's working without a contract. Maybe I half believe that, but he's going to sign something. He wouldn't be doing these matches on TV without, in these promos, without them having some kind of deal. But it turned out fucking not.
I'm still kind of slightly mad it fucking happened in the first place. Like, it really is. It's one of the things, like you said a few minutes ago, Gareth, about, like, it kind of makes you sad, because this is, I think of all the sliding door stuff, this is the one that makes it the fucking crossest. And just being convinced about how it wouldn't work with him in WWE, and about how, oh, they'll book him strong initially, but they'll never put him in a serious like WrestleMania program. And you thought, oh, Vince. And then when the risk of dating this, because for all we know, by the time people are listening to this, he could have lost two WrestleMania main events in a row.
JP, let's not big this up.
Rock's world champion now. By the time Simon listens to this, Rock's walking around with the belt back here.
Yeah.
Cody's back in AEW by the time Simon's listening to this.
that honestly could happen, though. Like, genuinely.
You've always said
it
that.
It seems unlikely, but I'm going to... WWE seemed unlikely, didn't it? Like, yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. Like, imagine it.
You know what I remember about that, though, lads, is like we're saying there about, like, I remember watching the first night of WrestleMania, me and Crewe and ours, and obviously it was Seth Rollins had a misty opponent, didn't he? And then when the lights went out and then you're just there wrestling as only one Royal Family, I was jumping up. And do you know what the next day was? When we went to Leeds for our live podcast. And I remember you picking us up and me just having the best smile on my face, Ben. I remember that. And I was like, he'd come home, and I was winding you up, and I was fucking,
I hadn't slept, mate. I didn't remember anything.
But it, as you said, though, him to... WWE, as you said there, Benny, you thought, no, they're not going to get him right. The same presentation, the same theme music. He literally was took off AEW telly, put at WrestleMania, and they've done a great job. You know, whether we'll, to the end of time, Benno, we'll always disagree on whether he should have won last year at WrestleMania. But you, both of us cannot deny the fact of he's remained the most over guy babyface. And, you know, they've kept him strong for like 2 years now. So it's incredible, really.
Do you know what they did do? They lifted him off AEW TV from the week before. He said, "I'll never challenge for that world title," and they put him. They let him keep his gear, but they took that guy from the Dynamite. Episodes of Dynamite, dropped him there, and basically just done with him what for the main part what AEW should have been doing with him for that time period. Wouldn't you? And you know, you just. I look at it now and looking over this period and just thinking about, like, it's insane. It's pure insanity how he was booked, how he booked himself, how he was allowed to leave, how everything, because I think now you look at it and you put it over Kenny Omega, put it over like the CM Punk run and things like that. Like, if you looked at the biggest miss of the first 5 years of AEW. It's got to be Cody Rhodes, hasn't it? Because when you look at those crowd reactions early on, you look at the way that he was presented and things, he was the absolute star of the company. That promo that they did on the COVID, when it was him and Matt Jackson and Kenny in the ring, he looked 2 times the star Kenny Omega did, 5 times the star Kenny Omega did, the screen presence and everything.
The yellow t-shirt didn't help that from Kenny.
And it's just absolutely berserk, absolutely berserk. But then you sort of like look back on some of them points, and it's just that he just wasn't selfish enough, was he? Like, he thought that by being giving to the next stars and to other people and things like that, and putting the focus on them rather than him, he thought that was doing the best thing for the company overall. And actually, the best thing for the company overall was Cody Rhodes at that point being the face of the company, who was the world champion, who, you know, and that might not have had significant legs in it or something like that, but it was just a blown opportunity. And for him to 12 months on being in a feud with QT Marshall, you're just like, what the hell's going on in the world? Like, it's absolutely bizarre. And you mentioned it there, Matty. I put it as the last link in the thing. It's obviously him at WrestleMania coming up through the floor of that stage when you finally get, they've edited out the bit of the top of his head, being able to see for a short period of time. But him coming up onto the stage and just in a massive stadium looking like a megastar with a huge crowd. I've goosebumps myself. Like, just every time I've watched about 12 versions of that from like fan cam footage from the crowds and things like that. Insane, like, reaction to him, and you're just like, fucking hell. And that's what you had, you know. I've called it, look at what you could have won, like that clip basically in the fucking spreadsheets. Like, it's wild that you had that in your hands and you just wasted it away, frittered it away.
I was just thinking about it there, lads. Like, that, as you say, Gareth, watched it, like yourself, fan cams. I remember, like, just being so excited that happened when I got back from Leeds with the trip with you guys, like, just seeing all his interviews he'd done. Obviously, it's Cody. He'd literally done about 90 interviews, didn't even have any podcast with every interviewer. Literally done, like, 20 minutes with each. And I just, like, I couldn't believe it still. So I had to keep watching the interviews. For, like, did that really happen? Did he really turn up and do the WWE? It was, honestly, the most surreal moment of the past, like, I don't know how many years, lad. Seriously, like, that's genuine, that. Because we all, as Benno said, everyone had the doubt, is it going to happen this? It is the most surreal moment in, what, 2 decades? It's got to be, as, like, on telly, like, in WWE. It's just remarkable. And he is, you know, he's doing well to this day. And we will have another debate, I'm sure, in the next couple of months to see whether they actually hit the landing, Benno. But, you know, either way.
Not to date the recording, it'll be happening in approximately 4 weeks' time. Yeah.
Brilliant, though, it is. He's done amazingly well, of course he has.
What it has done is, for me as a non-WWE watching person, it's made me excited for WrestleMania doing this deep cut, because, like, watching him, getting a reminder to what he was like in the early days, I just want to see him have that moment. I want to see him win the big one at WrestleMania, been stood up there in the corner holding the belt up with fucking all these people going bonkers. Like, it should have been in AEW. Like, it's at some point that it was never done. I want to see Cody Runnels have that moment. But
that's the thing. That's the thing. It's like, if it wasn't like Roman fingers out, he does deserve it. That's the thing. He does deserve this. Yeah. He needs to be the guy. If anyone is to beat Roman, he's the only candidate. But I just can't see how The Rock's going to take away from his moment, though, isn't he? Like, either way, is The Rock going to be that, like, selfless to, like, if he does cost Roman, is he going to let Cody have the end bit? Is it not going to be Hogan Warrior-ish, where he's shaking his hand, hugging him, raising Cody's hand? Is he going to let Cody have that moment? That's my only slight doubt of why Roman might win. I don't know, boys, but it's intriguing nonetheless, anyway, and I can't wait for it myself, Gareth.
Yeah.
Right. Well, unless anybody else has got any comments left in the barrel of their Glocks that they want to unload. We'll draw a line under there then. So great to bring a deep cut back. I've enjoyed having a good debate about Cody's run as a
you've reclaimed it, mate.
Just thinking about it. So
yours.
You'll have to think of a new name for them story ones or them match ones, lads.
just pull out my arse, you know, mixtape maybe. I don't know, that might work.
But boys, another dealer's choice month has been amazing. We've had all our great choices. I've enjoyed every episode, and I hope the listeners have too. It's been brilliant.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Been a great pick. Like, I'd love to, like I say, I think the homework definitely got a bit harder towards the end. Like that last bit, as hard as it was in real life to relive it, it was like fucking, it was a slog watching those last few months. But it was worth it for science because of how good like those early months were. And yeah, it's like a really, really interesting period to go back and watch, especially like you keep saying with the comparison to Cody now in WWE. So yeah, cracking one from Gareth to complete the set for this month.
Absolutely fucking brilliant choice, mate. Brilliant stuff again. Love it. Always love a dealer's choice, and I hope everyone else has as well, because he's a particular highlight. But yeah, this was a cracking choice, Gareth. Dangerously contemporary, though. I think we need to perhaps watch on that. There's things about this where I don't like it, where it's just like, oh shit, there's audio of us talking about it. So again, just to stress the disclaimer that any opinions that we did say in previous podcasts, they don't count.
JP, you know what you said earlier about the old JP? I had visions of the movie Looper, just you in 2019, you in 2024, going at it in a big conversation.
Oh, fucking hell.
The good thing is, though,
have some words for him.
If you do want to relive this period, just play the AEW game because it's all set in the first fucking month of AEW. So,
you'll never let that one go.
The game that came out this year. Honestly, rewatching that stuff, like that's all that kept coming to mind for me was that. It was like, fuck, I'm playing. Oh, where have I seen this recently? Oh, yeah, in the game that came out like fucking 4 months ago.
Benno, even Will Coolen said, didn't he want to shout like Kenny Omega promoting like Final Fantasy VII and all these other games? He never once promoted his own fucking AEW game because he knows it's shit.
Well, he didn't head it up. He fucking should be promoting it. Yeah. Not asking him to
Cody
pose.
Would.
Oh, wait.
Cody would because he's a proper EVP. He knew his job.
Shaq wouldn't. I'll leave it to you to say goodbye then, JP.
Ta! Latvian, Indo-European, which seems like that's a twist I never saw happening with Latvia there as well. Obviously, it is Eastern Baltic language. No population count. Who can tell? No one knows how many people live in Latvia. Bye-bye. Nothing to do with Cody Rhodes.
See ya.
Holy moly, woke up in it slowly. It's the one and only, yep, the big homie. Second generation, do the work, innovation. Ace, keep acing. Get in the ring and your time, you'll be wasted. Face it, don't think you can slam me. Wrestling has more than one royal family. For Shody, my homie, my Brody. AEW's EVP, my brother Cody. It's on you.
My father said, when I was younger,